You gotta keep them separated.
So I was on my way over here. And you got snow last night. You got, well, like an inch or so.
Like a quarter of an inch.
Like a quarter of an inch. It's like nothing. All right, so.
Nada.
Up on me, I live about an hour away from you. I'm a little closer to Philly. We got, like, you know, between an inch or two. But it didn't really stick on the roads. It just stuck on the ground. You know, like the grass and the dirt and shit like that and cars. So I had to clean my car off this morning. That was a pain in the ass. I hate that shit. Fucking so is a pain in the ass. That's besides the point. So I'm on my way over here. And you know how, like, everywhere throughout here there's, like, open fields and stuff? Like, right by the road?
Right,
drive
right.
By. So the wind is whipping across the road, blowing all the snow over the road. So there's, like, a good, like, 100-foot stretch of snow-covered road. And everything else is dry. Not even wet, just dry. With, like, little wet patches here and there. So, you know, because, you know, I got my WRX, like, last March?
Yeah, it's been about a year. I guess it's your first one.
It's almost been about a year, and I've been dying to just, like, have, like, a real good day where I can just, like, go out and there's, like, 6 or 7 inches of snow in an empty parking lot and just screw around. So, like, anytime I see an opportunity to screw around, I do it.
I'll never forget the first time you did that with me in the car.
Oh, in the Saturn?
Yeah, it was a Saturn. It scared the shit out of me.
I had the car going sideways on the road.
Yeah. Down the Shire. oh, yeah, we're going to die. Yep, dead.
Now, keep in mind, I'll only do this when it's safe. The only thing I'm going to hit or damage is going to be my own vehicle and not somebody else's personal property. So anyway, I'm coming down this road. It's a 50-mile-an-hour speed limit. It's a 50-mile-an-hour speed limit on this road. So I'm like, oh, I see the snow. I'm like, all right, nice. I look behind me. I look in the rear. No cars coming behind me. I look down the road, there's a car maybe like 3/4 mile down the road. I'm like, alright, I got some room. So I slow down to like about 25 miles an hour, and I pull over to the shoulder, all the way to the shoulder, I hit the snow, I turn hard left, kick the ass end of the car out, go across the road, come back into my lane, and straighten out just before I hit the pavement again, and I just keep right on going. You should have seen like the person in the driver's seat. The car coming along the other way. It was like some old dude. He was like, you can't see my face, but
kids in their fancy driving.
that was funny. The whole time I was just looking for like a parking lot, or like a patch of dirt that I could just like screw around in before I got here because I just wanted to screw around so bad. But yeah, we didn't get enough snow, and the cops around here are dicks, and there's nowhere around here you can really do anything like that.
You mean do retarded stuff and almost kill yourself?
No. You don't. I don't have to be going fast to just have fun doing it. In fact, I think it was a few months ago, I found my way onto a baseball diamond. I'm not going to say what school it was.
I bet you first to home plate was pretty fast.
Oh, I didn't go first to home plate. I started right about where like the shortstop position is, and cut the wheel hard left, and just did about like 15 donuts in the baseball diamond, and then left.
That was like when we were in Cherry Hill, and you were doing crazy shit.
Oh, that was just one though. That was just one, and it was.
And you were still getting looks.
Because it was in front of a restaurant full of people. That's the only reason I didn't do it longer.
The Cherry Hill Italians, they're hard bunch.
Well, no, it's not that I was worried about the people. I was worried about somebody, you know, picking up their cell phone, because everybody's got a freaking cell phone nowadays, and calling the cops. They're like, hey, there's some guy, like, fucking around in the parking lot.
You think that was resentment?
What?
Everybody having a cell phone nowadays.
Well, they do. Even
like, say that with some resentment. Like, well, you shouldn't have cell phones.
Even little kids. There's like 13-year-old kids running around with iPhones. What do they need that for?
Play games. That temple runs fun.
Dude, they don't need an iPhone. They can get themselves a PSP or a Nintendo DS. They play games. What the hell do they need? I shouldn't say a cell phone, because yeah, I get it. You got a kid, you know, if he's out at his friend's house, he's going to be able to get in touch with them. They don't need an iPhone. You can go out and buy one of those, you know, flip phones. You can still put games on them, but it's not an iPhone that costs like $400.
It's not the same thing. I don't know. Parents can do whatever they want with their kids.
Yeah, and that's the problem nowadays.
What, that they can do whatever they want with their kids?
The whole parenting
thing. Having
a
kid, you can do whatever you want.
The whole parents these days are retarded. Kids are like running amok everywhere.
All
the kid has to do is like threaten to call social services, and parents have to back down.
So why you want to send them to like Taiwan and get beaten with belts?
No, but it needs to go back to the good old days where you know
the
good old days
when women couldn't vote and blacks were slaves.
When we were growing up, you couldn't pull half the shit these kids do these days, could you? You couldn't. You can't pull that kind of shit these kids do. In fact, that reminds me of a video I saw a couple of days ago, and it's actually probably already viral. People are posting it all over Facebook. This guy from North Carolina, his daughter posted some stuff on Facebook about her parents.
Sophisticated state.
Anyway, let me tell this story. The guy, his daughter posted some stuff about Facebook about how she's tired about how they always like force her to do chores, and now she has to like do all their laundry and stuff, and now she's surprised she has a life.
So it's like slave labor.
Oh, I mean,
they're using their kid as a slave, pretty much.
If you believe her version of it, yeah. So this guy's like, all right. So he read her Facebook post, and there's like so many.
The father.
Okay. He's on video. This is the video of her father reading this letter on Facebook, and then he's like, all right. He's like, I'm gonna get to all these things in a minute. So after he finishes reading her letter, he's like, all right, this is what your chores are. He's like, you have to come home. If there's dishes in the dishwasher, empty it. If the dishwasher's not full and it's not clean, just make sure that everything's in
the
dishwasher. She's 13.
13, okay.
She's 13. She's in high school. You know, it's time for her to start learning responsibility.
13 in high school?
Whatever. No, and actually, no, I think she's 15. No, she's 15.
Okay.
She's 15.
A little different.
So, and, you know, she has to do her own laundry. She doesn't have to do her parents' laundry. She has to make sure her room's clean. She has to make sure her bed's made. You know, normal shit that a, you know, 15-year-old kid has to do, you know? So this has happened once before. Not before.
White girl, Spanish, black?
White.
Asian? Okay.
White.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm putting the emphasis on the H. She's a white girl.
Okay,
good. A la Stewie Griffin. But anyway, getting on with the story, her parents are on Facebook. They have their own Facebook. She has them blocked. You know, Facebook has that privacy option where you can
my
block.
My sister's 21. She's ready to block my mom.
I don't even have my mom on Facebook.
Does your mom have a Facebook?
She does.
And you now, see, though, what kind of dick son are you that you can't have your mom?
She barely uses it. She doesn't even have a picture of one.
I don't even know why she has it.
Anyway.
So she barely uses it. That's perfect. That means she's not, like, up your butt about anything.
Yeah, that's true. I haven't called my parents in a while. They should probably do that. Anyway, so she has her parents blocked, right? But the way that they actually found this post is actually kind of funny. And the funny part is that she thought she'd get away with it because her dad's in IT. So her dad's like a computer nerd, right? He doesn't look like one. He's wearing like a cowboy hat and he's got like the Canadian tuxedo on and shit. And he's sitting there. He's got the southern accent.
Canadian tuxedo?
Yeah, you know, like a denim shirt and shit. And jeans. So her father's in IT, and she thinks she can get away with it. But the way she actually gets caught is actually kind of funny, because the family has a dog, and the dog like finds its way in family photos and stuff like that. So they actually made a Facebook for the dog, and she's friends with the dog on Facebook, but she doesn't have the dog classified as a family member. So like 2 days after she makes this post, the dad logs into the dog's Facebook to comment on some pictures that were just recently taken, and he sees this post. And, you know, I'll try and find a link, or at least maybe we can play the audio from the video at the end of the show. I'll do that for you guys. I'll play just, like, her letter, just in case you guys are, like, curious as to, like, what she actually said to get in this much trouble. So her father's response was...
This will force people to like our page on Facebook now.
I'll even post a video on our page, right?
Yeah, that's what we'll do.
I'll post a video on our page.
If you're not going to play it at the end, come to our Facebook, click like.
There you go. I like that. So, So the father's response was, he's like, all right, he like basically outlined this girl's chores. And then he's like, you know, I told you, this is the second time this happened. The first time I told you, you know, this happened, I said, the second time the consequences are going to be much worse. The first time this happened, I wanted to put a bullet through your laptop. So like, so now this is what's going to happen. So he picks up the camera and he's like, this is your laptop. And he's outside in the middle of a big field. That's your laptop on the ground right there. He's like, and this is my, you know, I forget what kind of gun it was. He's like showing the gun. He like takes the clip out, shows there's bullets in it and shit. And he's just like, unloads the entire clip into this girl's laptop. And he's like, yep. So, parents, you know, tell your kids, you know, don't screw around on Facebook, don't be disrespecting your parents, yada, 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 this, that, and the other. And he's like, yeah, we're going to talk more about this when you get home from school and you're grounded, basically, until I say so and all that bullshit. But
I forget. I was watching something when I was little. I couldn't tell you what show it was. But the kid misbehaved, and they had a pet dog. So much like this father, instead of killing a computer, the father kills the dog in front of the kid. The
what?
Kid's crying. Yeah. Because
what did the kid do to the dog?
No, the kid didn't do anything to the dog, but she was misbehaving or something. And the father was like, yeah, you want to misbehave, you little bitch? Boom! Peace out.
What?
I forget what show it was.
This was fake.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine? That's like Michael Vick shit.
Michael Vick was hanging up and everything.
And
those NFC East quarterbacks are pretty good. Aren't they?
So you're itching to talk about Eli Manning, aren't you?
We've been saving this. We've been trying to talk about this like in person. We're like, no, save it for the podcast. We went out the other night. We almost started arguing, and we're like, nope, save it for the podcast. So I'm going to let Mike go ahead and say what he needs to say.
I'm just going to go ahead and hone in on that comment that you just made about these NFC East quarterbacks being good. Now, are you just saying that because of Eli Manning elevating the entire group, or are we talking about all of them being good? Because obviously Rex Grossman is not an elite quarterback.
Obviously. Okay.
Before...
I should even say the NFC's quarterbacks. I was just trying to go to Eli.
So you're just trying to go to... All right. So before we get to Eli, what do you think about... Let's just throw the name Tony Romo out there. Where is he at?
Top 10 quarterback in the league. He's a solid quarterback. I would take him in Miami any day of the week.
Now we're talking about game day quarterbacks, not your fantasy quarterback.
Yeah, obviously. I don't... When I talk... We're talking real football. We're not exactly...
Yeah, I'm not talking about the fantasy game. How about Vic?
Overrated. Incredibly overrated. Defense has figured him out last... Not the year that just passed, but the year before that, the end of the last year.
I would tend to agree with that, but do you think... All right, what do you think is closer to the real Michael Vick last year, meaning... This 2010 season, or this year that just passed?
The year that just passed.
You think he's closer to that, being that kind of guy?
I think that's the true Michael Vick. Let's look at it like this. Last year, when he went off, he was sneaking up on everyone. You know what I mean? This year, everybody had time to prepare for him, and he couldn't do anything that he wanted to do. They won a few games at the end of the season, but those games were largely meaningless for the teams they were playing as well. Let's be honest.
Even if they were, you did see the team start to play better as a team towards the end of the year. I mean, you had no offseason. Michael Vick still hasn't had a full offseason as the starting quarterback for the Eagles. You remember they had the lockout this past year, and the year before that, Kevin Cobb was taking all the first-team reps. So, I mean, you also had the new offensive line system coming in with Howard Mudd. New system, new protections, new, you know, just a whole new scheme altogether. I think the Eagles are... I mean, did you see the odds for a Super Bowl next year?
I think the Eagles were the favorite from what I remember.
No,
hearing.
not the favorite.
But they were one of the top three.
They're in the top four.
Yeah.
I think it was Green Bay is like 6-1.
Which is absurd. Talk about overrated, but we won't even go there just
Green
yet.
Bay 6-1, the Patriots are 7-1. I think Pittsburgh was in there. At like
poor Hines Ward. No more Hines Ward in Pittsburgh.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you don't watch SportsCenter, so you wouldn't have known that.
No. What happened to Hines Ward?
They're cutting him.
Really?
He has got 1 year left on his deal. He's gone.
That's
he said
crazy.
He was willing to take a pay cut. Still got the boot.
Wow. Anyway, it's funny because the Giants are actually, I think, 16-1 to win the Super Bowl next year, and the Eagles are 12-1.
Yeah, I don't put too much stock in what they say a week after the season's been over.
That's Vegas, though.
It's also been a week. Let's see what happens in the draft.
That's true. That's their initial impression. So obviously
they also said the Patriots were the favorite in the Super Bowl.
They make those lines to get people to bet and to make money, not because they. And let's be honest, they're in the business of making money, not picking winners.
Yeah, but usually they're pretty accurate as far as like during the playoffs. Every one week, I can usually pick out one game and go. That's where they're wrong. That's where I make my money.
Can't be right all the time, or else nobody would win. But anyway, so you wanted to talk about Eli Manning.
We both want to talk about Eli. You go first. I'll rebut.
You're going to rebut? Rebut?
I'll reply.
You're going to reply. All right. So obviously where this is going is whether or not Eli Manning is elite.
I've said he's elite for the last 3 or 4 years, maybe more than that.
Really?
And
wait, 3 or 4 years. All right. How much stock do you actually put into the QB rating?
Zero.
Absolutely zero. Okay. So I'm just going to throw that stat right up. I have Eli Manning's entire NFL career stats in front of me.
Here we go, and stat boy, because Ben Roethlisberger puts up great numbers. Here we go. Throw stats out.
It's not.
Stats,
you know what?
Are meaningless.
That's
watch the game.
The stats actually do mean something.
Okay, go ahead. Just
all right.
Say what you're going to say.
Let's go ahead and... First off, I'm going to throw this out here. 2 years out of his career, he led the entire league in interceptions.
And?
And? Don't you think that shows poor decision-making?
No. Even interceptions is a horrible statistic. Because I watched Dan Marino his whole career, and you know how many interceptions he threw because, passes were dropped and deflections. So I don't even look at numbers. I watch games. I watch guys win games or lose games.
I get that.
Eli's won 2 Super Bowls.
I get that.
Aaron Rodgers had a great year, but big deal. Who gives a shit?
I understand that whole thing that, yeah, there should be an interception category for receivers because sometimes it's not the quarterback's fault.
And Eli, I remember this season alone, Eli had 6 or 7 interceptions that shouldn't even have been counted against him.
Well, he had 16 interceptions this year and 20
so
touchdowns.
Take away half.
So you still got 8 interceptions there, which is a good year. But I mean, you look at Tom Brady's numbers. Tom Brady isn't throwing up many interceptions. Tom Brady always has a high TD to INT ratio, always. And he doesn't have any, and his receivers aren't half as good as his Giants.
They have different quarterbacks.
Exactly.
No, I mean, they play differently. They have a different style. They're different.
Eli's more of a gunslinger than Brady
is. I don't know
if
gunslinger is a word, because I don't like that word.
Well, I'm not really calling him a gunslinger.
Brett Favre, and I think Brett Favre is the most overrated quarterback of all time. All
right, Eli's more of a risk taker.
I'll take a chance, yeah.
Eli's more of a risk taker, whereas Tom Brady doesn't need to, because the schemes they put in place always put it. He throws a guy open. The guy could be.
I kept hearing that one week where he made that one throw. He missed the fucking throw, and it happened to be to the left, and the quarterback, the receiver. Brady said it himself. He said it was a bad throw. And I hear 3 or 4 analysts go, oh, he threw a guy open, like he's this magician. He's not.
But there is a way. I mean, there's always a way to, there's always a place to throw the ball, put the ball where only the receiver can make a play on.
But you're the same person who told me when Eli made that throw to David Tyree that it was luck and he just threw it up there.
I have to look at the play again.
Go back and watch it. David Tyree had position on the guy. The guy was behind him. He was coming back towards Eli. Eli made a perfect throw.
Right, but I mean, the way the catch was made. How many guys used to be catching a ball?
Yeah, but Eli's, the receiver still caught the ball with his hands when he went up for it.
But
that's not Eli's fault that David Tyree made it more difficult.
I'm not saying that the throw was lucky. I'm saying the catch was the fact that he was able to hang on to it the way he did. That's not Eli Manning. That's David Tyree. That's all on him. Eli doesn't make the catch.
No, obviously he doesn't make the catch. The throw was right there.
But anyway, getting back to what I was going to say, I've got his stats, all right? Now, obviously, his first full season was in 2005. Completion percentage. Is that a fair stat to use?
No, because you still drop passes don't account for that stat.
No.
There's a reason why football... look at football compared to baseball. Baseball is all about numbers, whether you get into the Hall of Fame, well, you didn't have 3,000 hits, well, you didn't have 300 wins, well, you had so many no-hitters. Baseball's all about numbers.
Well, yeah,
football,
I agree with that.
Watch the sport. Does the guy win games? Eli is always winning.
If I'm going to sit here and analyze Eli Manning, the most readily available thing is stats. I can't. I'd be sitting here for hours watching all those games. If I wanted to
go back and watch the games,
he's a 58% career passer.
Okay.
That's not knocking me off my feet. It just isn't. He's got 27,579 total yards.
And how many years has he been in the league?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and he played 9 games in
Oakland. Okay, he played 7 games, and he has how many yards? 27?
2,700.
Okay,
27,000.
27,000. Okay, what's a good year for a quarterback in total yards without looking it up?
What's a
good year? When you go, okay, that guy had a very good year.
Like 3,500 yards.
3,000 yards is the number. If you throw for over 3,000 yards.
I think you gotta, after this year, you're gonna have to elevate that to 3,500.
Why? They didn't. I don't. Here's the thing,
the way the game is evolving, though, it's all passing now. You had 2 people break Dan Marino's record this year.
Right, and what did they win?
Whether they won anything or not means nothing. If they're throwing the ball more than they are ever now.
You know what, you keep bringing regular season stats up to me, and to me, who gives a shit about the regular season? And this goes back to our arguments, too, when we talk about the Phillies. Well, the Phillies have the best regular season record, and that's all that counts. No, win a fucking championship. That's the most important thing.
For a team.
No, for a player. For a player.
Well, obviously, if you're playing in the league, your ultimate goal is to win a championship.
Why does LeBron get shit on all the time? Why does everyone talk shit on him?
Well, among other reasons, he hasn't won a championship yet.
That's the number one reason, that LeBron cannot win a championship. Eli's won 2.
Yeah?
Yeah.
As part of a team.
Okay, he was the MVP.
Let me ask you something. A great player elevates a team, obviously.
So Eli's elevating the rest of his team.
Is he?
Yes. If you want 2 MVPs.
Who elevates their team more? A quarterback or one guy on the floor in the NBA?
Both.
Both? But
look how good Peyton Manning makes his receivers look. How good Tom Brady makes his receivers look.
Have
you ever heard of Victor Cruz until this season?
Actually, I heard of him last year.
Okay, well, you're better than me then.
Well,
I never heard of the guy.
No, because I'm my team's in the NFC East. Of course, I hear about shit that's going on with other teams.
I've never heard of Victor
Cruz. But I understand people that don't follow the Giants or any NFC East team for that matter probably have never heard of Victor Cruz before because he was on the practice squad. He wasn't a regular, player. But I heard his name mentioned. Really think anything would come of
it. I never heard of him, and the guy ended up being one of the best receivers in the league, and he's about to go get peed.
By somebody. Whether it's going to be the Giants
or not. So who elevated who? Eli already has a champion, a Super Bowl ring.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not like he didn't have receivers back in 07 when they beat the Patriots the first time. We had Plaxico Burress at the peak of his career.
And who else?
I don't know. It's 2007. That was a long time ago. Who else did he have?
David Tyree? Not even in the league anymore?
How old is Tyree anyway?
He's 31.
Why isn't he in the league anymore?
He's not very good.
Well, what are you going to do?
Still want to see Eli elevated his guys. You see how that works?
I see how that works. I mean, yeah. I mean, you can elevate people around you without being elite. The whole we're gonna Now, obviously, you've made your case as to why he's elite. I'm going to speak my case as to why I don't think he is yet.
I'll let you talk.
The
guy's got two fucking rings. He's not.
That is the key word.
Mind.
That is the key word. Yet. Eli Manning. All right. It's all about consistency. All right. If you
stalling straight from Mike Gill.
No, it is not.
This is exactly what he said.
No,
he
it is.
He sent me a text of exactly what he said. I was like, I'm listening to this. I don't need to hear it. Go ahead.
All right. Whether or not Mike Gill said it. It's just because he had a chance to say it first. Alright, just because I agree with him doesn't mean I'm stealing his ideas.
Before we go any farther, but I was listening to him. I'm in my car, jumping, like, I screamed, like, what? He's the most biased piece of shit ever. Go.
Just because I just so happen to agree with his viewpoint on it, I need to see...
You both happen to be Eagle fans.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm from South Jersey. What do you want? Alright? Just because the guy has won two Super Bowls, he's gotten into the playoffs.
That doesn't mean anything.
I thought you were going to put the mic down. All right, the Giants are the epitome of all you got to do is get into the playoffs. They really are. All you got to do is make the dance, and anything can happen. Get hot at the right time. All right.
What about the Steelers?
What about the Steelers?
When they snuck into the playoffs and won a couple of Super Bowls. That, you know, that team wasn't elite or anything, right? That wasn't a high-level team. Ben Roth, right? They won the Super Bowl twice in the 60s.
But they're like a perennial playoff team. Since Eli Manning has become the quarterback of the Giants, they've gone to the playoffs 50% of the
division?
Time.
Who's in the tougher division?
Pittsburgh's got the Ravens.
One team!
Yeah, one team that's also won Super Bowls.
They won one Super Bowl.
Yeah, all right, name another NFC East team that's won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, but the Cowboys are always right there. The Eagles are always right there. And the Redskins suck. So, you understand what I'm saying now? The Browns are always bums. Cincinnati, up until this year,
the Cowboys,
finally.
I kind of disagree with your statement with the Cowboys
solid.
Being
they're,
right there.
They've
been to the playoffs once in the past 15 years.
They're still
years.
A solid team. Last year, the year that just passed, Romo was hurt for the whole season.
Whether he was hurt or not, it's...
What do you mean?
Playoff appearances.
Super Bowl rings, right?
Yes, and the Cowboys have only been in the playoffs once. They have had one Super Bowl win since the 90s. Or one playoff win since the 90s. But, I mean, half the seasons that Eli Manning's been with the Giants, they've missed the playoffs completely. And... Eli Manning has had some pretty dreadful seasons, some pretty lackluster seasons. And other seasons, he's been really good. And this season, he just happened to be spectacular. He elevated his game to an elite status for this season. As far as considering him an elite career player, I need to see some more of that.
So how do you put Aaron Rodgers as an elite career player?
How?
How is Aaron Rodgers an elite career quarterback player? I think he is, but by what he's only played, 4 years?
Yeah.
Okay, so how is he elite?
How is he? Just watch the dude play.
Watch the dude play. What's he do?
He's
won one Super Bowl.
Fucking amazing.
He's fucking amazing.
His completion percentage is off the charts.
He might win one more Super Bowl his entire career. He is so incredibly overrated.
All right, you go and say he's elite, but then how is he overrated then? If you agree with everybody that says he's elite, how
he's
is he overrated?
He's elite, but okay, fine. A couple people, let's say, overrate this shit out of him.
See, now, do you think I overrate him?
I don't know where you put him. I don't have him best quarterback in the league.
No, neither do I.
Maybe third or fourth.
That's exactly where I have him.
Maybe.
You have him ahead of Eli, though.
No.
You don't?
No. How could I?
How could you not?
Eli has two Super Bowl rings. Aaron Rodgers has one, and Eli just busted his ass in the playoffs. You know what happened 4 years ago in 07? Eli busted Aaron Rodgers' ass and knocked him out of the playoffs.
This is true, but
you know what happened at the end of this season? Right before this season ended? It was a close game. You know
what people are going to forget about this playoff run from the Giants? So they went through a Green Bay team where there were some off-the-field issues going on.
But you had this tendency to totally sell short what a championship team does. Oh, well, the Giants won a World Series. Well, our offense just wasn't non-existent. Oh, the Giants beat a 15-1 team. Oh, well, they had off-field issues. You know,
you can't tell me that didn't play a factor.
It didn't.
Really?
It
offenses,
did not.
They got coordinators of the Packers son dies, and they find his body in a fucking lake.
They were dominated. And the offensive coordinator being there and not being there didn't drop those balls. You know what dropped those balls for those receivers? No, they were about to get popped by that ridiculous defense. That's why they were dropping balls.
I'm not
and saying, Michael Finley's a bum.
I'm not saying it's the only reason. I'm just saying it's a contributing factor.
What does the offensive coordinator's son have to do with everybody dropping passes?
It has to do with the fact that they were probably close with the kid.
They were still open. The ball's hitting them in the hands. Yo, you think they were thinking about that doing anything?
No, they weren't. But, you know, in the days leading up to that game, it had to be weighing on their mind, affecting their preparation.
It had nothing to do with when they played the... When they really... Dude, did you watch the Packers this year? They were in a lot of close games. A couple really lucky games go their way. Okay, when they played the Giants, they should have lost that game in the regular season.
But they didn't.
But they should have.
Why should they have? They scored more points.
They got the ball back. Like, it was the same exact situation as the Patriots, and they happened to make one ridiculous play.
You want to talk about breaks? The Giants got three really big breaks in the Super Bowl.
Three really big breaks?
Yes.
What, Wes Welker being 5'5"?
No.
Go ahead.
Three times they put the ball on the turf and didn't turn the ball over. Because they got lucky bounces.
They weren't lucky bounces. It happens.
The first... Exactly. So you just blew your own argument about Packers out of the water, getting lucky breaks during the regular season.
Now you're talking about fumbles, though. Fumbles are totally different things.
I'm just saying. Yeah, the ball could have very easily bounced away, and it would completely change the game. There was the first fumble the Patriots actually recovered, but they had 12 men on the field. So obviously, the penalty that raises the whole play.
Whose ball is that?
It's the Patriots' fault, but okay. I mean, the Giants are fortunate that...
That's not fortunate.
You really expect a Bill Belichick-led Patriots team to make that kind of mistake in the playoffs?
Yes, it happens to everybody. It doesn't matter who's coach.
It's completely unexpected.
So what's their excuse? Did Bill Belichick's son, commit suicide?
No. You're getting me sidetracked here. If they don't have that 12 men on the field, Patriots get the ball there. In Giant territory, possibly changes the game. And then you get those two fumbles that came later in the game. Wasn't Eli one of the ones that fumbled the ball? Or was it Brandon Jacobs? I know Brandon Jacobs put it on the
I know
turf.
Bradshaw fumbled.
Yeah, it was Bradshaw. I remember that one specifically because it bounced one way. If it would bounce the other way, it would have went right to the Patriots.
That's football.
I know that's football. But you can't tell me...
You can say what if all day. If LeBron James would have made a couple of those shots he took in the fourth quarter last year...
You can't tell me that that's not a fortunate break.
It's sports.
I know it's sports, but you can't tell...
That happens.
Yeah, but why does that happen one way or the other? It's fortune.
What do you mean it's fortune? It's how sports work.
I don't get it.
If Bill Buckner makes that catch at first base instead of it going through his legs, the Red Sox won the World Series in 1986.
Yeah, but that's not...
What's that? Is that fortune? Did the Mets get lucky?
No.
No, the guy folded under pressure. Things happen.
Exactly. That's the guy folding under pressure. This is an odd-shaped ball that
is... You're still playing hypotheticals. If this, if that. Well, it did it. Eli won his second Super Bowl, and he's the man.
You're missing the point.
What point am I missing?
You're giving me this example of a guy missing a routine grounder. I'm talking about you drop a football from 5 feet in the air, you have no fucking clue which way it's going to go. Absolutely none.
No, but it's...
It'll land in a different spot every single time. And the fact that it bounced the Giants' way twice, not just once, you got to say they're a little fortunate that it happened for them.
I refuse to use that word because that happens.
And what word do you use to describe that?
Football. That's sports.
It's football. It's sports. Yeah, but at the same time, it's not like the Giants were. It's not like their skill had anything to do with the ball bouncing their way. You can't explain it. It's lucky.
It's not. See, I have trouble using that word in that situation. The ball, it is what it is. It's just, it happens.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree with you, but it doesn't happen for a reason. It's just, it's good fortune.
You know what it is? What annoys me is it's just another way of going, well, the Giants were lucky. Eli really didn't deserve that Super Bowl.
I'm not trying to say that at all.
That's what it sounds like you're implying.
I'm not trying to say that at all. I'm not trying to take anything away from Eli Manning. Played a great game. He actually did. He should have thrown at least one interception. He got a little lucky with the guy didn't catch it. You remember that?
I don't think there was it matters. One.
I'm just saying. I mean, he didn't. It's not like he played it. He didn't play a perfect game. Do you think he played a perfect game?
He did what he had to do to win.
Well, obviously, he did what he had to do to win. So did Tom Brady. But you know what? You know, he had the ball in the intercept in the end zone for the last play of the game, and you know all Gronk had to do was catch it. You can say the same thing about Tom Brady.
I do think Tom Coughlin outcoached Belichick.
Or I'll give you that one.
For sure.
I'll give you that, and Tom Coughlin's top five coaches in the NFL right now.
And I was laughed at when I said that before the game. Laughed at.
Not by me.
Yeah, by you, by Tony,
no.
By Sharif.
I didn't.
You're all sitting there, but Kurt Warner said, Steve Mariucci said, he'll take Tom Coughlin over Bill Belichick. You guys were, right after I said it, Mooch said it.
No. That's completely different. That's completely different. That's saying one's better than the other. I'm putting both those coaches in the top five. I still have Belichick ahead of Coughlin.
By how much?
Not much.
Think about them head-to-head. Think about them head-to-head.
Head-to-head is one thing, but if you want to talk about overall coaching and all that kind of stuff, there isn't much that separates the top five coaches. I mean, in my mind, you have Mike McCarthy's in there, Bill Belichick. Mike McCarthy of the Packers, the system he put together? Come on, man. I think the main reason for all their success lately is because of that coaching.
Awful. Go ahead.
I'd put him up there. I put obviously Bill Belichick's up there. Obviously Tom Coughlin's in there. Andy Reid's in there. I have and you know Tomlin. Those are the five coaches.
Those
are the five coaches that come to mind when I think of good coaching. Who'd you put number five then? Active coaches.
John Fox in Denver. Good coach.
He came from Tennessee.
No, he came from Carolina.
That's right, Carolina.
Okay, and he put in work in Carolina. Remember, they were in the Super Bowl.
That was when Tom Coughlin was a defensive coordinator with them.
Yeah, and Jake Delhomme was a quarterback.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. You got to look at John Fox. Got to look at Rex Ryan, whether you like it or not. You got to think about that.
Why? He's never been to a Super Bowl.
Then you have to think about the two Harbaugh brothers, the San Francisco and Baltimore.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Okay.
All right, that knocks Mike McCarthy out right there. I can't remember which one's at San Francisco and which one's in Baltimore.
I couldn't tell you the Jim or the John.
All right, the San Francisco Harbaugh is better than the...
Yeah, he's a hell of a fucking coach.
What he was able to do with the 49ers this year was just mind-blowing.
The Lions head coach, I can't think of his name, very fine coach. So, did just today say Mike McCarthy? Nah.
Yeah, you know what? Now that I think, now that I think about it.
Lovie Smith. Lovie Smith is a hell
with
of
the
a
Bears.
Coach. The Bears.
You watch those Bears next year. They're going to be good.
Jay Cutler comes back. Matt Forte.
Yeah.
They get one receiver. One receiver is all they need.
And you know, and out of the AFC, you got to look out for the Texans.
Kubiak's a good coach.
Yeah, I mean, you got Wade Phillips as a, you know,
defensive coordinator, and
as a great defensive coordinator. Sucked as a head coach. Absolutely awful head
passive.
Coach. I wish he was still coaching the Cowboys. They would still suck.
Yeah, Jason Garrett's a pretty good coach, too.
I wouldn't put him in that upper echelon.
Oh, no, I wouldn't either, but he's a good coach.
But, I mean, yeah, he's obviously, if he wasn't a good coach, he wouldn't be.
You know how bad it is in Miami? I don't even know our coach's name.
Didn't they make like the DB coach their head coach or something like that? They made one of their position coaches the head coach. That's how bad it is.
All right, so we really got off track. my whole thing is this. Everyone shits on LeBron for never winning a title. That's the biggest thing I always hear. And I shit on LeBron for never winning a title. And coming up incredibly small every time he's in a championship. Okay? Eli's been in two championships, and he's won them both.
I'm not taking that away from you. You can't take
that
away
from him. But to me, it sounds like you value the regular season more than you do the playoffs.
Right, but when you're evaluating a player's entire body of work, you can't just take the regular season and throw it out the window.
All right. Do the ratio for me. Go ahead.
What do you mean the ratio?
To me, it would be like 85% playoffs, 10% Super Bowl, 5% regular season. That's how... I don't know. I'll think about it, but that's simple. You do yours.
I mean, you got to also understand that you're front-loading the playoffs. I think you're front-loading the playoffs way too much. Because you have to... These are all professionals. You have to play at a high level just to even make the playoffs.
Your ratio.
What's my ratio? I'm having a hard time figuring it out while I'm sitting here talking. I would probably be like somewhere between 35% and 40% on the regular season. And then maybe 40% to 50% on the playoffs, and then the rest on the Super Bowl, whatever that winds up being.
So the Super Bowl is the lowest percentage.
Absolutely.
The biggest game of the year is the lowest percentage.
Absolutely.
I don't understand how that works. The one that gives you a ring.
Yeah.
A championship.
Well, what are you giving the Super Bowl, then?
I'll go 30% regular. No, I shouldn't even do that. We'll go 25% regular season. Go 45% playoffs.
So that's
60?
7 to 30% Super Bowl. You're not
30%. I still you had it like 5-10%.
No, if I go 30% or say I go 30. All right, I'll go 35% regular season, 45%. Playoffs, and then that would be 20% for the Super Bowl.
So you still agree that the playoffs mean more than the regular season, right?
Of course.
Okay.
The reason why
what's Eli's playoff record? I think it's like 83 or something like that.
That's
pretty
ridiculous.
Fucking
and
absurd.
A lot of them are road wins.
Okay, so the thing you value the most, he's amazing at.
Buddy. Oh, God. But I still value the regular season. He's not consistent
he's
in the regular season.
He's amazing at it. Who gives a shit about the regular season? Would you rather have a guy who has an up? Look at it like this. If he had an up and down year, right? And then they make the playoffs and go on and win the Super Bowl. Who gives a shit what he did in the regular season? The guy just won a fucking title. Would you rather have Aaron Rodgers' regular season, and he goes out, loses his first playoff game, or would you rather have someone who's okay all year, solid, and they get to the playoffs and they win the Super Bowl?
Are you talking about my team, the Eagles?
In general,
If you told me that my Eagles are going to go 7-9, make the playoffs, and win the Super Bowl, I would take that in a heartbeat. Because it's all about titles for me as a fan, personally, as a player. Of course, I would want that, you know, that 18-0 Dolphin team from the 70s that went undefeated the entire year and brought the title home.
I'll put it to you like this. When the Lakers had a three-peat, only one out of those 3 years we had the best record. Now, were we the best team? Obviously, we were easily the best team. But all throughout that season, we would get lackadaisical because we were like, look.
Well, that's the NBA. You gotta pull it back every once in a while because you're playing so many games. With the NFL, it's different.
You're missing the point. The only time they went off in the regular season is the very first season they won that championship during the Kobe and Shaq year. The era.
Right.
Okay? So after that next year, we were like, all right, well, all you gotta do is be good enough to make the playoffs. Once we make the playoffs, we're gonna win a fucking title. No one's gonna beat us 4 out of 7 times. Right?
I get that. I get that. It's
a matter of getting there.
At the beginning,
if you're there, you're going to win. The Giants, I don't know. You just told me you value the playoffs more than a regular season.
You kind of...
Eli's amazing in the playoffs. So, how is that man now elite when he's 8-3?
He's right there. He's right on the precipice of becoming elite. I want to see some more. I want to see it again. I want
to
see it again.
See what again?
What he just did. In some way, shape, or form.
This is the second time.
In some way, shape, or form, I want to see him do it again.
He already did it once. He won one championship.
Look. See.
And he won another. All right.
Here's elite. All right. Everybody at home, in your car, just put your hand like you're measuring something, the height of something. All right. There's Eli. All right. Now just move your hair, put your hand like you're measuring something as far as, like, you're trying to show somebody how high it is, alright? Put your hand there. Now, move it down like a blonde cunt hair. There's Elite, there's Eli, and right above him is Elite. He's right there, I'm just not ready to call him Elite yet.
And you're going to sit there and tell me that much isn't you being biased?
No, I'm not. I'm not the only person out there.
The only other people out there not saying you're Eagle fans. I haven't heard a non-Eagle fan say that.
I have.
I haven't. Show me one.
I don't have their phone numbers. These are people that I meet out in the world while I'm working.
Show me one.
I can't. Alright, you want...
I talk to people who play sports all the time, who play basketball, high-level football in high school. Watch ESPN.
They all say Eli
is high level.
I'll give you an example. I was listening to. All right, I know you hate Mike Gill, but this isn't. I'm not using Mike Gill as an example. I'm
using one of his callers
who was a self-professed Giants fan that said he wasn't elite yet.
Okay.
Said he wants to see it again. Wants to see more consistency out of his game throughout the regular season, as well as the playoffs and the Super Bowl.
But I asked you. What does he have to do?
Do it again.
Do what again?
Not necessarily win a Super Bowl. He doesn't have to win a Super Bowl.
That's the whole point. That's all he has to do is win a Super Bowl. He can't win a Super Bowl and has okay record for the rest of his career. No one's going to remember shit except for the fact that the guy was a fucking winner. That's all they remember. If he has okay seasons every year and he goes out and wins another 3 Super Bowls, what are you going to remember?
What am I going to remember? I'm pretty much going to remember his entire career.
You're going to remember his regular season.
I'm going to remember how he was kind of an inconsistent quarterback, not really super spectacular in the regular season, but he...
Let's say hypothetically, what was his worst year? You saw the stats pulled up?
Yeah, I do.
What was his worst season?
In terms of what?
Regular season stats, whatever.
Well, I mean, are we talking about yards and interceptions? Let's start off in 2005. 2004, he only played 9 games. So 2005.
Yeah, use that year. His worst year.
2005, he was 52.8% completion percentage. 3,762 yards.
2,000 yards in 9 games.
Average 6.8 per attempt. An average 235. Yards per game, 24 touchdowns, 17 interceptions.
Okay. Now, let's say he does that the next 3 years, Mike. Okay? That's a 9 games. That's, smaller sample size. Let's say he does it the next 3 years. In those next 3 years, he wins 2 Super Bowls.
You think he's going to win 2 more Super Bowls?
I'm saying hypothetically, you think he's going to have that bad of a year?
Huh? No.
I'm saying hypothetically, he has that shitty of a year.
Well, I mean, he's done worse.
Two more. That's what I wanted. I wanted his worst. Give me his worst year. Whatever it is, you got. Guys, imagine
throwing yards away because I mean they're all. I mean he ranges anywhere from 3,200 to this year he threw for 4,933.
So,
but last year, 2010, 539 attempts, 62.9%, which is. Good, he's right there on par, but he threw for 31 touchdowns, 25 picks.
Okay, let's look at that season. Don't cut me off. Let me finish. look at that season. Okay, let's say he has that season for the next 3 years. But in those next 3 years, he wins two Super Bowls. Let's just say, hypothetically, he has that shitty of a season, but he goes on and wins two Super Bowls in the next 3 years. Where do you go with him at that point?
If he wins, if he's got four rings.
But he was horrible in the regular season. He was awful in the regular season, but he's got four rings.
How does that happen?
What do you mean?
Somebody that's horrible in the regular season doesn't win four Super Bowl rings.
He still threw for 31 touchdowns. He just happened to have 25 interceptions.
No, well, I mean, let me pick a different year. Why don't we go ahead and pick a different year, all right? Let's look at a different year.
I just want you to imagine the worst possible year a quarterback can have for the next three years.
Here you go. The 2000. Yeah, actually, looking at it right now, his worst year is probably 2007.
The year he won a Super Bowl.
They snuck into the playoffs.
It doesn't matter. So did the Steelers.
He threw for 23-20 in 2007.
Yeah, let's say he has those kinds of years the next 3 years, and he wins two Super Bowls out of those 3 years. What do you have to say about Eli Manning then?
It's kind of a tough hypothetical.
You got to give me something.
You got to give you something?
Give me an answer of some kind. I know what I would say if I were you. I would say, well, you just have a very good regular season quarterback, and the playoffs he turns on, and he wins fucking games. That's what I would say.
That's probably a reasonable thing, the conclusion to come to.
Okay, and that's pretty much the way you would have to look at it. But, like you said earlier, you value the playoffs more than the regular season. So who gives a shit about what he does in the regular season? If he's winning Super Bowls, that's what counts.
Yeah, the reason why you still can't just completely discount the regular season is because there's more of those games. There's more of a sample size.
Okay.
Because, I mean, you look at the Super Bowl, if you're gonna weigh heavily on the Super Bowl, guy can just go out and have a bad game. It happens. Tom Brady had a bad game in the Super Bowl this year.
He didn't have a bad game.
He had an off game.
That was
against
the Ravens.
He didn't have a great game in the Super Bowl. He didn't. If Tom Brady had a great game, we'd be talking about the Patriots being the champions, not... You know, I mean, you'd also look... I mean, if he had his number one weapon at 100%, Gronk. Would have been a different game. That interception never happens if there's a healthy Gronk there. At the very worst, it's an incompletion.
I think I made my point, guys. We'll put up a poll on Facebook. Okay?
For all, like, six of you to vote on.
For everyone to vote on, yeah. But listen to it. Listen to, you know. I think I won.
Well, see, here's the thing. Winning or losing an argument that's based on an opinion... Really? I can have my opinion, and you can have your opinion. We're both right. That's the beauty.
Instead of yourself, you value the playoffs more, and Eli's amazing in the playoffs.
Right.
You made my point for me.
How did I make your point for you?
Because I said, what's more important, the regular season or the playoffs? Who's in the playoffs? Well, Eli's awesome in the playoffs. That's what counts.
And the more I think about it, I think I put them right side by side, equal.
Of course, because there you go.
No. Yeah, I didn't know where you were going with that.
That's why it's a great argument.
You bastard.
You had no idea where I was going with it, and you fed right into it.
Well, I don't understand why you have such a problem with me saying that I'm just not ready to call him elite yet. I'm putting him right there. He's knocking on the door.
My problem is it's bias. It's just incredibly biased.
So if you think I'm biased, then you think I'm biased, and that's that.
Okay.
That's your problem. That's a you problem, all right?
That's not a me problem.
It's a you problem. You're the one that has a problem with it. All right, that's our tribute to Colin for the day. But all right, so you had some other stuff that you wanted to talk about.
Well, we got to talk about the Nick Diaz fight from last week. First of all, who'd you have winning that fight?
Steve knows I fucking hate Nick Diaz. I think he's a fucking douchebag. I think he's an asshole. I'd love to see him get his ass beat on a daily basis. But he obviously won that fight.
Clearly won that fight.
It wasn't even... I shouldn't say it wasn't even close.
It was a close fight.
It was a close fight. But it was... It's not like it was, you know, this guy says, oh, no, Nick won, or then the other guy's like, nah, Nick lost that fight. It shouldn't have been like a 50-50 type of deal. He was clearly the winner in a close fight.
I agree. Now, you know I'm on Twitter, and I follow the sport pretty closely. there's a great post somewhere. Here. Give me one second.
Yeah, man, take your time. But, I mean, if you guys didn't see, or if you guys weren't watching the fight, I mean, Nick Diaz, it came to, you know, it went the five rounds. There was a decision. And what was the score? It was a 30.
Two judges had that fight 49-46.
49-46.
Absurd. They had to win the fight 4-1.
I mean, if anything, all of the decisions should have been 48-47.
Alright. Just so, let's go through a couple fighters who were watching the fight. Patrick Cote. I had Diaz 1-2-5 in contest rounds 3-4. That's Patrick Cote, UFC fighter. Kung Lee, another UFC fighter. I had it 1-2-5 Diaz. Joey Beltran, I had it 4-1 Diaz. So it was bad. Like everybody in the world thought it was Diaz's fight. That's not even the biggest story. So right after the fight's over, Dana's ready to go immediate rematch and go to that. Then we got news that our boy, the openly in love with weed, Nick Diaz, failed a drug test. He got popped for marijuana.
Wait, we're going to completely skip over the fact that he came out after the fight and said he was going to retire?
Go ahead.
I mean, I saw that. I was just stunned because, like, the dude's, like, all about it. He's all about MMA. He loves doing it. He loves training. He's, like, one of the best conditioned guys in the sport, if not the best. Trains like a fucking animal. And, he, you know, this decision comes down that Condit wins the fight. He's pissed. I would be pissed, too, if I were in his shoes. But then he comes out like a whiny bitch and says he's going to quit.
And he's not the only one that's done that. BJ Penn lost the fight. He was like, yeah, if I'm going to fight like this. Lots of fighters do that. It's one of the most... Think about it. You train every day, 24 hours a day, for a fight.
No, I get
you
that.
You absolutely get screwed. Two judges had you losing that fight 4-1, when all the guy did was run away from you the entire fight. He ran.
I get it, but there's different ways of going about expressing your dissatisfaction. You don't have to come out and act like a fucking 6-year-old and say you're going to quit.
You know, it's funny because I think you get that a lot more in MMA than any other sport. But he's not the first one to do that.
It's because it's an individualistic sport. And I'm going to segue back to football for a second. When you're talking about weighing a championship, I put a lot more weight on championships in MMA, tennis, golf, where it's just you and you alone, as opposed to a team sport where you need the support of your teammates in order to achieve that.
I don't know how, you know, I get what you're saying, and I agree for the most part. I think the difference is with MMA is sometimes you can be better than a guy and still lose.
Well, of course. I mean, you can be better than one football team can be better than the other, and the, you know, well, that's what they say.
What I mean by that is the fact that somebody could have, you could be a better striker and have better Brazilian jiu-jitsu than the guy, and the guy just be a really good wrestler. And just, as soon as a fight starts, boom, take you down and sit on you for the whole fight. And now you lost
down,
the fight.
And then you lose the fight. Yeah, I mean,
you know, I mean, it was almost the Chael Sonnen Anderson Silva fight, you know? Anderson Silva was getting dominated, even though he has obviously superior striking skills and obviously superior Brazilian jiu-jitsu, which came out at the, you know, which ended up winning him the fight in the fifth round. That fight comes to a decision. Chael Sonnen won the fight because he pretty much sat on it. If you go back and watch the fight's boring. But when it was happening, it was so unbelievable. And that, like, I go back and watch the fight now, and it's kind of a boring fight. Because old Chael...
Talking about the Diaz
kind of fight? No, I'm talking about the Chael Sonnen Anderson Silva fight.
Okay.
Which is, like, the perfect example of what I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, one guy can have... Alright, so we can break it down to jiu-jitsu, striking, and wrestling, just for the sake of the argument.
Okay.
Say you dominate your opponent in two of the three areas. That's great. That's all well and good. You should win the fight, right?
Style of fights.
You gotta make your opponent fight your style of fight. If you can't do that and you get sucked into his style of fight, you're gonna lose. If he's a good wrestler and he dominates you in that area and he gets you into a you know, a ground and pound type situation where he's just gonna sit on you the whole time, if you can't counteract that, your two skills are superior, don't mean squat.
What is it that you hate about Nick Diaz and Nate Diaz?
What's that?
What is it that you hate about the Diaz brothers?
I just don't like their cockiness. I don't like their attitude. They just they go out there and they think like they're better than everybody else. I mean, I guess it's partly because that's when I was growing up. I hated those kids in high school that were always cocky and just like talk shit to everybody, myself included. And I just don't like that kind of attitude.
All right, let me ask you a question. I agree. I hate that attitude. Before, really, the last, 2 months, I hugely agreed with you, didn't I?
You did.
Okay. Then I had it explained to me brilliantly. And I also watched the UFC prime times, and I saw how they really were. They're not like that. So check it out like this. You're in a fight, right? You game plan. You have your whole strategy ready, right? What's Nick Diaz's like favorite style of fighting? The Diaz brothers.
I don't know. I don't know too much about.
All right, well, they love to stand up and brawl, and they're really good at Brazilian jiu-jitsu. It's pretty much that simple, right?
They're not wrestling.
They're not great wrestlers, but they're okay wrestlers, right? Okay, so now you're fighting against a guy who is probably a lot of the guys they fight. What happens is with that shit talking, they're making the person, their opponent, fight their fight. Because now you're getting pissed off, right? So now instead of going in there, okay, I'm going to go in, shoot for a quick double, and, move it to side control, maybe, ground and pound. Now the guy is fucking talking shit. What, bitch? What, bitch? What you going to do, bitch? And now you're getting fucking mad. This guy's punching you out in front of 40,000 people, and however many millions watching at home. Now all of a sudden, you're not fighting your fight.
Of course, yeah, that's the whole part of the sport, is using your strengths to your advantage and using their weaknesses to your advantage.
One of the Diaz brothers' strengths are talking shit during a fight. If you really watch them before and after fights, they'll give you the finger and everything before the fights are. They really won't say anything. They'll be, he's a little bitch or whatever. As soon as the fight's over, they go and give the guy the biggest hug in the world. Besides Nick Diaz the other night, that's because he was completely screwed.
Yeah.
But I've watched the Diaz brothers fight for a long time. As soon as the fight's over, they go help the guy up, whatever it is, It's just before the fight.
I see your point.
Now, do you think... Okay, so I listened to other podcasts. I happen to love Joe Rogan's podcast, and they were talking about the Diaz fight. Rogan happens to believe that if he was smoking... I think pot should be completely legal, but that's besides the point. So I've never done anything weed related before in my life. Never smoked it, ate it, nothing. But Rogan says it gives him an advantage.
What gives him an advantage?
Getting high, especially before.
Big pothead Joe Rogan says it's an advantage. Huh?
He says it helps you sleep. So think about it. I know a week before my fight, I wasn't getting any sleep. I know that for a fact. Rogan goes, it helps you sleep. He goes, you're not thinking about it. He goes...
So does Ambien.
Huh?
So does Ambien.
I don't know if that's legal.
It is. It's sleep aid.
Yeah, but it still might not be legal according to sports commissions.
Oh, yeah, I don't know that either.
I don't know how that works. But he says... Do you agree with that?
That it helps you sleep?
Yeah. It would help you sleep?
To a point, yeah.
Make you less nervous a little bit?
Oh.
Relax you?
It depends.
On?
It depends on what kind of high you get. Depends on what you're smoking.
Okay. I don't have an answer for that.
There's all different... I mean, I'm not sitting here trying to pretend like I'm an expert in it either, because...
Just have more experience with it
with
than
my
I
very limited experience.
Your very limited is still more than me.
Which would be none.
Exactly. So that's why I have to go to you.
And there was never a point where I did it on a daily basis.
Okay, I know like Rogan, when he goes to BJJ class... He gets high before. He just says it's more fun. My muscles are more relaxed. Is there any truth to that?
Personally, I could not function.
You couldn't?
No, I wouldn't. I could. That's why I don't. I've never done it. It's something that I, that if I did it, it was a recreational
it
thing.
It was like to have
hanging
fun.
Out, to have right. fun. Never really at a party. Just like, you know, like four or five, maybe six people, and we just chill.
Okay. So then you're not of the belief that it would give you an advantage.
I'm merely just saying I don't know. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. I mean, it affects people, different people in different ways.
All right, well, obviously, like, the Diaz brothers are, like, super into smoking and getting high. So, don't you think that they probably deal with it pretty well as
well?
Well,
yeah, it's a different thing. I mean,
it benefiting them, I guess.
Obviously, if it's something that they do on a regular basis and you get used to it, I mean, think about this. I mean, think about alcoholism. You know, if somebody stops drinking, that affects them negatively if they don't do it.
But I think drinking, like, a week before a fight and getting hammered, a week before
I'm not trying to say that drinking alcohol is going to be an advantage. I'm just trying to... smoking weed is something that you do on a regular basis, is something that you get used to. You know how when you were younger and you used to drink a lot, you'd have a higher tolerance for alcohol. You wouldn't get trashed off of six beers.
Right.
It would take you six beers instead to just get buzzed. It's the same thing with weed. You know, if I were to hit a bowl today, it would take me one hit and I'd be high as shit. But if I did it for, like, 6 months every day, I would have to, like, pack two or three bowls just to get high. It's the same concept. So, I mean, if these guys are doing it that much, maybe it is an advantage.
I forget the law. Do you think, in sports, let's say, do you think it should be legal for athletes, professional athletes?
Why? If anything, to me... As far as actually being high while competing, I can't really... How does that give you an advantage?
I would think it would make you less intense.
I'm going to go ahead and say that, yeah, it probably would. Like, it mellows you out. It kind of gives you that, like, you know, I don't give a fuck attitude. And I think personally think I would... think it would give it be a detriment to your game.
Okay, so if you think it would be a detriment, why wouldn't you legalize it if the athlete goes, yeah, well, I still want to do it?
I don't really have a problem with making it legal or illegal. I don't really care. You know, I mean, personally, I think the only reason why it is illegal and you can fail a drug test and be fined or banned or whatever is because it's illegal by law.
No, you're right. I don't know if you're right, actually, but I get what you're saying, and I agree almost 100%.
I mean, part of the reason why is because it is illegal in the state. It's illegal in this country. It's illegal in most countries, actually.
It's not illegal in his state.
By California? Does he
has a card for it.
Oh, he does.
But the fight was in Vegas. Excuse me.
So what if you fight? What if the fights happen in California?
That's a great question.
See, I think that's got to be a. What if the fight's happening in Amsterdam where pot's legal? Yeah, I think that's got to be legislated by the actual sport. So if it's true if the fight's going on in one state or place, it's got to be true for all of them. You can't just have different rules just because it's being held in a different venue.
You're absolutely right. It needs to be a universal law for. That's the cool thing now, like, that's happening with MMA is all title fights are five rounds. Before, like, one promotion, you could elbow a ground an opponent. One you couldn't. Now it's universal. You know.
Yeah.
That was one of the biggest problems actually with international basketball. There was
different rules.
There's a couple small different rules, but it was enough to make you go, oh, well, you know, if an NBA player goes overseas, he would have, I don't know, trouble would be the word. So check it out. The ball is on the rim, right?
Uh-huh.
In the NBA, you can't touch it.
Oh, you can.
You can't touch it.
It has to be...
It has to come off the rim first, right? If this is the rim, the ball has to come off it first. Internationally, if the ball was to stay on the rim, you would just be able to put it in. And likewise, if you're a defensive player, you were able to grab the ball off the rim.
Wait, so you're telling me in the NBA, if a shot goes up and it's like circling the rim like a toilet bowl, I couldn't just go in, as an offensive player, I couldn't go tap it in?
That's offensive interference.
That sounds a little weird.
Why?
Because, I mean, it's one thing.
You have to let the shot finish. That's the way it's. You have to let that shot finish.
What if it hits the rim, bounces up above the rim? Could I go up and grab it and put it down?
If it's over the rim, you can't touch it.
So you have to wait until at least 50% of the ball is below the rim before you can touch it?
You have to, yeah, pretty much.
Or what if it bounces up and away from the basket?
Then you're fine.
As long as it's not directly above the basket, you can touch the ball.
As long as they don't think the ball's going to hit the rim again. If the ball's going to hit the rim again, you can't touch it.
That's kind of a tough judgment call to make.
That's why you don't touch it until it's completely off the rim. Now, internationally, if the ball, you can grab it whenever you want once it hits the rim.
Gotcha. So that's a minor difference, but how often does that actually usually happen, though?
Where? All the time.
In basketball.
All the time. Any rebound situation.
Yeah, usually in the NBA, there isn't really too much of that circle in the rim type of deal stuff going on.
Yeah, but if the ball hits a backboard and hits the rim and goes up and it might hit the front of the rim, but, you know, you got to wait for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a little bit more complicated.
It is, but the whole point is it's good that it's becoming universal as far as the rules go.
Right.
Which is fantastic.
So, and you wanted to talk about pot and it being legal in MMA or just in general?
Well, I think in general, to me...
You know it's legal here in Jersey, right?
I've heard that from my sister, but I don't know how true that is.
It's a lot tougher.
And your car smelled like weed, he's searching your fucking car.
Oh, of course, unless you have a card.
A card? Where do you get a card from in New Jersey?
You get it from a doctor. I don't know. I haven't looked into it myself. I have no desire to get one. But as far as I know, or as far as I can tell, it's probably similar rules to California. You go to a doctor and you get it prescribed to you.
Well, California, they have weed stores.
And they're going to have the same thing here in Jersey, too. They're going to have, you know, the pot shop. You can go down to the corner store and get you some weed if you got the proper documentation.
I typed in, is weed legal? And the first place was Canada. The second place was Amsterdam. After that, New Jersey. Everybody in New Jersey wants to get high.
Yep. Everyone's Googling. Everybody everywhere wants to get high.
New Jersey legislator approves medical marijuana bill. This is in 2010.
Yeah, it's been legal for a little while now.
Only the severely ill.
Yeah, it's like I said. It's
so they're not
like
as loose as they are
as
in California.
California, exactly.
In California, anybody can get one as long as you have a California driver's license, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta know somebody that'll actually prescribe it to you because they can't just prescribe it to you for no reason.
I'm nervous. Apparently, I'm going
dumb. And you know that government-grown shit is good.
that's what they say. I mean, well, first of all, you have to, in order to sell it, you have to have a license to sell it because then you have to grow it.
Yeah. Well, see, here's the other thing, though. It's legal in California. This is like a big deal over there. It's legal in the state, but the federally, it's still illegal. So, like, the feds every once in a while will go in and, like, bust these stores up because they're violating federal law. But they're not violating...
Which is so ridiculous.
Yeah, it is ridiculous. They need to make a decision as an entire country to just legalize it. Because if they legalize it, then you can tax the shit out of it and make money off of it. You can regulate it.
Same thing with prostitution.
Same exact thing with prostitution. You make it... People, whether you legalize it or not, people are going to do it one way or the other. And if you legalize it, you can regulate it, you can tax it, and make it safer.
Drug dealers, or crazy pimps, or dirty prostitutes.
Here, like, I mean, in Nevada, prostitution is legal.
You go. I don't know if it's Nevada. It's just,
or is it just Vegas?
It's not even Vegas. It's a city just outside of Vegas.
Well, wherever.
A better example is Australia. Since they've had legalized prostitution, which has only been like 2 or 3 years, rape crimes have dropped over 50%.
That's huge.
Are you kidding me?
I'll look at
that's insane. Yeah, you're right. That's huge. It's incredible.
That's huge.
It's that easy. You go to a brothel, you go get your dick sucked, and you leave.
Yeah, and now you don't. Now you don't have to go through.
Now you don't have to go rape.
Now you don't have to go through the hassle of breaking into somebody's house and while they're sleeping to do it. And you don't have to worry about going to jail. And not only that, you don't have to worry about. I mean, and if you are the type, you know, exactly. They all get tested like once a month or something like that, and you know all the Johns, you know, wearing protection, things of that nature, yada yada yada. And you know,
but why? Okay, so. With all that said, why do you think it's not legal?
Because there's too many religious fanatics, there's too many people that are part of these groups that are so against it that they
won't
allow
it to happen. Why we fall back in every social issue. It was funny, I was watching Bill Maher Friday, and one of his guests was from England, and they were talking about this whole birth control thing and abortion and everything. And she said, I can't even believe in 2012 in America that this is even a discussion. In England, this is even an issue. It's obvious. It's clear what happens.
Yeah.
And I go to this country, and the country that's supposed to be leading the world, and this is an issue that has to be discussed and people actually argue over.
And it's not even an abortion, it's birth. We're still at the birth control argument, let alone abortion.
How far behind are we as a country?
Extremely far behind. You have these religious fanatics that don't want it to happen because they tout this whole like religious freedom.
Yeah, that's what they keep saying. It's religious freedom, but they want to force their religion on people who have. Don't give a shit about your religion.
Exactly. It's complete bullshit.
It's really... Talk about religious freedom. Let people do whatever the hell they want.
Yeah, I mean, these guys are getting all up in arms because all Obama wants to do is make it a requirement that insurance companies pay, if not in full, most of the cost of some kind of contraceptive device, whether it be condoms or birth control, like the pill.
And what's wrong with that?
There is absolutely nothing wrong with that.
People are going to have sex regardless. So what do you want to do? Like, you know, you talk to like people like Santorum guy, well, sex isn't all matters. What world are you living in?
He's living in his own little bubble where he thinks that's the way it works, and it's not.
No one. Come on. Unless you're overly religious.
Unless you're Tim Tebow.
Unless you're Tim Tebow, which a lot of people don't even believe him.
I have a hard time believing him going to the school that he went to with how popular he was.
He went to a school though in like Southern Florida. He was going to Florida. It's kind of been hillbilly's town. It's Northern Florida. It's closer to the south. I wouldn't be surprised if Tim Tebow was a virgin. I really wouldn't. Good-looking dude, but he just seems... I can't stand him. It's not that... I shouldn't even say that. He's annoying as hell.
It's his outwardly religiousness that annoys you. I mean, we've discussed this before. I'm sure, yeah, I'm sure if you told the guy, look, you know, you're coming to my place, you're going to hang out, we're going to have some fun, you know, there's going to be alcohol involved, you can drink whatever you want, but just do me a favor, just check your religion at the door, please. I'm sure he would be a cool dude to hang out with if he just checked that shit at the door.
I just don't want to hear it.
Exactly, so, I mean, if you just tell him, yeah, dude, if you can just check it at the door and not bring it up, I'm sure he'd be a cool dude to hang out with, but if he's the type of guy that can't do that.
I don't know if he would say that. I don't know if he would be like, well, Jesus is my savior, so he's dying. I have to talk about him 24 hours a day.
All right, well, then fine. If that's the way that you are, then fine. Go hang out at church, and I'll have my party, and I'll see you on campus every once in a while and just say hi to you or whatever. Or maybe not even that. He's just not my type of dude. If that's the way it's gonna be with him, the overly religious type. I can't stand that shit.
I don't care. If you're religious. I really do not care. Don't push it on to me. I don't want to hear it.
Whatever you want to believe. That's why I don't have I don't have a problem with any religion. I really don't give a shit. If you want to worship chocolate bunnies, knock yourself out. You know. Just don't force your ideas and your principles on me. You can tell me about them. I'll listen to you. I might think you're batshit crazy, but I'm not going to dislike you because you want to worship chocolate bunnies. I'm just using a ridiculous example, but I mean,
but I might not want to hang out with you as much if. No, I just don't need to force something. I don't want to hear your silly idea, you know?
If I ask you about it, it's one thing, but if we're just hanging out and having a good time, you want to tell me about the Lord Christ, our Savior, and shit.
And how you want to save me.
Yeah,
and
don't come knocking on my door wearing a white shirt and a black tie and ask me if I've accepted Jesus into my life. Please don't, because you're just going to get the door shut in your face.
And you went to a private school.
I went to a private school.
And you still pretty much feel this way without...
No, I mean, my parents raised me Catholic. I went to CCD. I didn't go...
But even your parents don't seem like that overly religious or anything. They're not, like, crazy.
No, I mean, my mom was raised a Baptist. My dad was a Catholic. And, you know, they put me in CCD, and they pretty much let me make my own decision as far as religion is concerned. They didn't force it on me. They didn't make me feel, you know, wrong for not accepting religion. You know, personally, the way I feel about it after all that experience as a younger kid is that not just Catholicism, not just Christianity, I'm talking about religion in general, is a fucking business.
It's the oldest business in the world.
Not only is it a business...
I mean, like, I don't think go that far, though. Like, with... I don't think, like, Judaism really is a business, although you would... but I don't think Buddhism would be classified as a business. I've been to a Buddhist, temple.
Yeah, they have a collection plate that they
didn't have a collection plate at all.
But you know people donate...
Where, to the Buddhist...
donate to your synagogue or your temple or whatever the fuck they call it.
Like, the synagogue doesn't really, like, ask for it. You pay to be a member.
Exactly.
That has to happen in order for a building like that to stay. You know, where does the money come from?
A lot of these, like the priests and the rabbis and whatever you know, the people are called that are you know, practitioners of that particular religion are called.
You got me sticking up for religion.
They don't work for free. They need
exactly.
Food. They need shelter. They need to get around. But what I'm saying is that
I have no problem with even them asking for a donation. That's going to happen. I don't know. I think the religion as a business thing. I don't.
A lot of them don't keep it simple though. How many times I've seen priests rolling around in Lexuses and Mercedes. They're supposed to be living a simple life.
That's what
they signed up for, and they're rolling around in a nicer car than me. A nicer car than my parents. And my parents make six figures combined, you know?
Okay. I don't think... Okay, I've never seen... My rabbi at the synagogue, he drives around in a little 80s old car.
That's the way it's supposed to be.
Okay?
Not necessarily that cheap, but...
Well, he doesn't have, like, a luxurious house, so I know... I don't know, that's why I think... That's a really broad statement, what you said is religion is a business. It is to... I think we should cut it down to a lot of the people in the South.
Oh, God.
Crazy churches in the South that are, you better donate or else you're not getting the...
You're getting excommunicated.
Yeah, you're getting excommunicated, and the money, and then the priests are taking it and pocketing it.
Exactly.
You know, that's the problem.
While they touch your little boy.
While they make a kiss, right? So I think that's the problem.
I mean, they got your they got one hand in your cookie jar and the other hand in your son's ass.
Well done.
No, but I mean, you see where I get it from. I mean, yes, I'm painting with a broad brush, but I mean, there's extremes to one end, and there's extremes to the other. Where there,
how was it at your school? Because I think all of your teachers had.
That's where one of my examples comes from.
Okay, see, now you say that, and now I went to a Jewish private school. All the rabbis lived in Lakewood, and they, what's the word? Everybody takes one car. What's the word?
Carpool.
They carpooled out every day in a big ass minivan.
Wow.
Okay, we had six teachers on that van.
That's the way it should have been done. Okay. Now, see,
so that's why I think we just had two different experiences.
I mean, the headmaster of the school that I went to, his name was Father Paul. I think he's still there. But he would always have like a Lexus or something. He had a new, different car every year. Yeah. Now, whether or not that was actually coming from the church or if that was coming because from the school, but that's just one example. I've seen you know, priests come out of store. Yeah, they're wearing like the collar and all that, the black shirt with the white collar. You know they're a priest. And you see him walk out to the parking lot. I was like, I wonder what this guy's driving. Motherfucker pulls out the keys to a Mercedes or a Lexus. Well, you got to be kidding me. That's supposed to be going back to the community, not to your pocket to buy you a nice ride.
No, you're absolutely right. And I've never seen that. My personal experiences, I've never seen it. Now, I've seen it, you ever seen the documentary, Ridiculous?
No, I didn't.
Alright, if you watch that documentary, if you ever get a chance, it's on Netflix. And if you watch that documentary, you're going to be like, how is that shit possible? You know? So, anyway, I'm on Facebook, and one of the guys I'm friends with, his name is Daniel Bolololi. He's a professor at UCLA, master's degree. I'm reading his book right now, and he posted a link. This is from a study in Ontario, Canada, Brock University, right? The title of it is Low IQ Conservative Beliefs Linked to Prejudice, Racism, and Conservatism. So they took 1,000 people when they were kids, right?
Right.
And the lowest people with the IQ...
Or people with the lowest IQ?
Yeah, they gave them... I think... Let me find it. The kids were 10 or 11 years old. And when they came back for it, they were 30 to 33 years old. So it was about 20 years. And what happened was they found that the ones with the lowest intelligence corresponded with racism in adulthood. But the factor that explained the relationship between these two variables was political. When researchers included social conservatism into the analysis, they account for much of the link between brains and bias. So when we say that, we're talking about gay marriage, pro-choice,
right,
things of that nature.
And moral issues.
Yes, that social conservatism. So people with lower cognitive abilities also had less contact with people of other races. This finding is consistent with recent research demonstrating that intergroup contact is mentally challenging and cognitively draining, and consistent with findings that contact reduces prejudice. Obviously, if you're around them all the time, you're not going to hate them as much.
Right, you're going to learn...
You're going to go, oh, they're people too.
Exactly. Instead of just blindly accepting what society says about them, or who you surround yourself with says about a particular group or race.
Right. There are multiple examples of very bright conservatives and not-so-bright liberals, and many examples of very principled conservatives and very intolerant liberals. So what they're saying is there are examples of it, but it seems like the predominant factor that they found in the study was if you're dumb, you're more apt to be racist and homophobic and all those negative things. You know, socially, they just are a mess.
You know what? I'm gonna get this web address. Just print it up on a business card. And as soon as I run into some of these racists, I'll be like, "You're a fucking dumbass. Here, go check this out. Here's my proof."
Really? there's a study that proves it. And what else can you say? I mean,
it makes sense.
When you talk to people and you find out that they're racist and they feel that way, they usually do end up being fucking idiots.
It's totally true.
You know, it's. And it's the truth.
It's totally true. I mean, I'm going to go ahead and say, there is a difference. Now, all stereotypes are stereotypes because there is some truth to them.
Absolutely.
Am I right?
Absolutely.
There wouldn't be a stereotype, if it wasn't true on some level. The difference is being able to categorize those people that fit the stereotype, and then the people that do not fit the stereotype. So, to say, all black people are gangbangers or thugs. there are black people out there that are. But then again, there's a lot of them that don't fit that stereotype.
The better example is all Muslims are terrorists.
Even better. Even better. And you know what, you know what the thing, it's actually more powerful of a stereotype because of terrorism, it could affect anybody at any time. You know, the guy could, you know, what's the first thing, you know, like a little old lady would think in 2002. In 2002, a year,
a Muslim
walked by. Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
And there's probably still people that still think that way when they see a Muslim person walking around. So, I mean, it is what it is.
Well, it is. I always felt this way. I always said racist people feel that way. But now I have proof. know,
it's always nice to be able to back yourself.
Now there's legitimate evidence of, hey, you're a racist. You're an idiot, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if we talked about this last week, so stop me if we did. But I was saying this last Sunday at the Super Bowl party after you left. We were playing poker and everything. And I guess now we should apologize for the lack of podcast last week to all three of our listeners. But sorry.
Yeah. Oh, but yeah, we were supposed to do it at Brad's house, and we were supposed to have like a kind of like a round table discussion with
bullshit party drinking and talking. But yeah, it didn't happen.
It didn't happen for various reasons.
So I'm not going to say who it was because there's no way he'll ever listen to the podcast. But I just don't want to say who it was. But we were talking about some social.
Wait, he's not going to listen to the podcast. Why don't we just?
Because it's a
anyway.
Family member who I happen to love a lot. So we were talking about the South, and for whatever reason, I really don't like the South. I've had some bad experiences. So we ended up talking to about black people. And he said, well, the black people in the South aren't as uppity. This is what he said to me.
Okay,
so I know what the word uppity means, but I wanted him to explain it.
Yeah, he's uppity. When I think of uppity, I think of the crusty white folk in, like, Princeton.
Well, what he meant is, you know, like, loud, obnoxious, kind of.
That's not what uppity means.
That's not what uppity means. Okay, I agree. But that's what he was implying, that the black people down south aren't as uppity.
Meaning they're more low-key.
Yeah. They know their place, in other words.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was
That's what he was getting at. Okay? And it was pretty ridiculous that he made that comment. So I said, Pop, what do you mean by uppity? All right, there you go. That's who it was.
Who? Oh, okay.
So I go, what do you mean by uppity? He goes, well, pretty much he says they know their place. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, well, they're not nearly as opinionated. And I go, Pop, hold on. And he goes, what? I go, I'm very opinionated. I have an opinion, right? I go, how is my opinion less, you know, how is my opinion stronger or mean more than theirs? You know?
Right.
And he was like, well, you know, the ones in the Northeast, they're always talking. I was like, I'm always talking. It's a Northeast attitude. It's not a black and white thing. It's a Northeast and Southern thing.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. But you talk to older people and they're still like, well, then he goes, well, I came up during this. Look, that's not what we're getting at. It's this weird thing of not being, I don't know, it's like, do they not understand that they're people? Like, and I said, Pop, I said, I'll be honest with you, when I see another person, whether they're black, Asian, Spanish, Muslim, I don't see black, Asian, Spanish, Muslim, I see another human being. And, you know, and I go on with my day. Not, oh, I just talked to a Muslim person. Hey, guess what I did today? No, whatever.
You're colorblind in that regard.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm the same way. Just think about how much If you are one of those people that think that way, like this person that Steve is describing, and think of how much you're cutting yourself off from the kind of experiences you're missing out on because you won't allow that type of interaction to happen in your life.
The only thing that could come from it is you learn. You learn about another culture. You learn about another people. You know, you learn about how they see the world. You learn about the food. I'm a big foodie. I love to eat. So anytime I meet, So you're cutting yourself off, and it's you said another thing. Well, I don't believe in interracial marriages. Shit like that. It's just insane.
It was a different time back then.
Rogan said it best on one of his podcasts. He goes, "So what do we have to do to progress the world? Do we have to wait for all these people to die?" He said, "Really, because they're the ones, obviously not my family members, but they're the ones who are in the government, who are holding America back, really, from progressing and catching up with the rest of the world." It's insane. It's sad of how great this country is on one hand, and that how far back we are on other issues.
It's amazing.
It's insane.
The country hasn't really changed much.
Think about it like this. When we were fighting an Arab war in Iraq, with Iraq or whatever, the only other country that didn't have gays in the military were the people we were fighting against. Openly gay people in the military.
Mm-hmm.
The only other people...
The only other country that wouldn't allow gays in the military was Iraq.
Were the extremist Muslims.
Wow.
If that doesn't tell you all you need to know... Now, obviously, we have it because Obama...
Yeah, I mean...
Has a brain.
What are your overall impressions of his first term?
I think he's done a lot more than people realize.
Now, I'll be honest with you, I have no idea what he's done. Because, I largely don't really pay attention too much to politics. Just because of the fact that I think it's all bullshit.
No, I agree. A lot of it is all bullshit.
It is. I mean, when you watch a campaign progress and go through, and then you see somebody get elected, and then you watch them in their term or whatever, how much of that stuff that they promise actually gets done? Almost none of it. And it's not because they don't want to do it. It's because the government as a whole, the way the government operates, is just too slow. It's like if we had something like a kingship or a dictatorship, not saying that we should, not saying that I want that, but if you had just one person...
I'll vote for you to be dictated.
If we had just one person running and making all the decisions, it's like the difference of turning
but
a jet ski...
what's the point of the government in America?
What's the point of it?
Yeah. It's supposed to represent the people.
Yeah, it is.
That's why you can't have one person.
Exactly. But what the point that I'm trying to make is, if you got a dictatorship versus a democracy, or which we can't even really consider the United States democracy anymore.
What is it?
I don't even know what to call it, but it's not.
It's a democracy. No,
not in its purest form.
Not in its purest form, but it's still a democracy. Compared to North Korea? North Korea is a dictatorship.
I'll get to that in a second, but the analogy that I'm trying to draw to you is, if say you want to change something, just picture a jet ski, and then picture a cruise liner. Which one can do a faster 180, the jet ski or the cruise liner?
The jet ski.
No, obviously, the jet ski. The jet ski is a dictatorship. The cruise liner is
what
a democracy.
What would you have said if I would have said the plane?
Huh?
How would you have reacted if I would have said the other thing you said?
The cruise liner?
Yeah.
I would have told you you're a fucking idiot. It's like, what planet do you
live
on? I
thought about doing
that. It's like, well, what planet do you live on where a cruise liner can do an about-face in about 2 seconds? But, the United States isn't like a pure democracy. I mean, how often do you get your way when it comes to political issues?
Not often. I guess not often.
There's always people constantly bitching about something or the other. And when somebody gets in office, 2 seconds later, they all want him out because they're not doing what he promised to do.
It's always the other side. I mean, even when Bush was in office, it was ridiculous. I mean, it wasn't ridiculous, I guess, but the other side's always going to be upset. I think it really goes back to the journalism in this country being a train wreck. On both sides, left and right.
Not only that, the only people you hear are the people complaining. You don't hear... When somebody's satisfied, they don't make us think about it.
Exactly.
When you're not satisfied with something or you're pissed off about something, you're going to make noise. You're gonna write articles. You're gonna write editorials. You're gonna get on the TV and blast the person about it.
You know why this country is in a dictatorship? That just remember, what was it like 3 weeks ago with this whole SOPA thing? The internet was up in arms. Wikipedia shut down their page. Google shut down their page.
In fact, I supported that whole movement.
And what happened? You don't even hear about it anymore.
No.
It's over.
It's done because it's poison.
Because it worked. Finally, the internet, you know, the internet did what it's designed to do. And I talked to my grandfather again. Well, the internet does more harm than good. A guy who's never spent more than, besides eBay. The internet does more harm than good.
Well, what harm does it do?
Well, kids could look at violent stuff and...
Kids can look at violent stuff on the television. And movies.
I get what you... I agree.
But, I mean, did he give you any other examples?
Well, it was other examples like the violence and
porn?
Sex and porn.
Oh, come on. Dude, kids in other countries can see full frontal nudity after 8 o'clock.
On regular TV.
On regular TV.
When I was in Israel at 13, it was full nudity on TV. They weren't holding back.
No, not at all. And you don't see people growing up.
Let's make it a very simple argument. A very simple example of all this is drinking in America compared to other countries.
It's not even close. Okay. The way other countries handle it, they embrace it. It's part of their everyday lives, and kids learn how to responsibly enjoy alcohol.
Right.
Whereas over here, it's made it, it's a taboo.
It's
a big taboo.
You're fucking trash. You think people are doing that when they turn 21?
It's not even 21. They tell you that you can't do it legally until you're 21. So it becomes, it has this mystique about it. It's like, oh, I'm breaking the fucking law. I'm going against the man. So you go out and you buy and you give the bum like $50 in the street and tell them to go buy you a case of beer. You keep the rest of the cash and you and your buddies go get trashed because it's against the law and for no other reason.
Here's the difference. I mean, obviously we do have way more people in this country than every other country that doesn't have that problem. Like, you look at like a country like England or Ireland or Spain, they don't have near the population issues that we have.
No.
We clearly have more population issues. So if you look at it like that, and, you know, obviously we have, since we have such a higher amount of people, we have way more fucking idiots.
Of course.
Than most other countries, just because it's going to happen with that many people.
Every country has its fair share of complete fucking idiots.
On average, I'm sure it's probably the same.
It's
but
the same.
Just because our population keeps growing and growing. And
I mean, obviously, if 10% of people are fucking morons, if you got 100,000 people in your country, you're going to have less morons in your country than a country that has 500,000 people in it.
Exactly. So, with that, I forget my point now.
You were talking about us having a bigger
population.
No.
So we have more idiots, so obviously we have to make more I call them Darwin laws. Protecting the stupid. It's like a seatbelt law.
Exactly.
Okay? If you know anything about Darwin, it's survival of the fittest.
I think it's funny that you bring up the seatbelt law because you never like to wear your seatbelt.
No. You're right. I don't. You're right. I don't. But if I die, whose fault is it?
It's yours.
It's my own fault.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, if you're in the passenger seat and the driver makes a stupid decision and decides that, you know, that he's going to try and pass his car and get
a
head
collision. I don't die. I prevent my own death by wearing a seatbelt.
Not necessarily.
In most cases.
In most cases, yes. There are some cases where somebody wasn't wearing their seatbelt and they got thrown from the car, and because they got thrown from the car, they survived.
Right.
But, I mean, those cases are few and far between. Seatbelts save more lives than they kill.
Absolutely.
And
so, no, but that's the, I call that the Darwin Law. Helmets. If you're riding a motorcycle and you don't want to wear a helmet, I have no problem with that. You're saving, eventually something stupid's going to happen. You're going to get hurt and you're going to die. Mm-hmm. And let it happen. Why are we protecting the retarded people?
The only person, as far as the helmet law is concerned, that I sympathize with is the guy that has to scrape you off the pavement.
Yeah, even then, though, it's why we should have to be responsible for you being an idiot.
No, and most of those laws, especially when it comes to traffic, like enforcing the seatbelt law and helmet law, it's all a revenue machine. It's all
better like this. You're allowed. You have to wear a seatbelt, but you're allowed to smoke a cigarette. Something that will clearly kill you. You're allowed to do legally.
Yeah.
But you better wear your seatbelt. You can smoke. You can smoke your cigarette, but you better be wearing your seatbelt.
Don't think for a
don't
second.
Don't die right now. Die in 30 years when you get cancer and
don't
die.
Don't think for a second that if tobacco industry wasn't as big and as powerful as it is, that cigarettes wouldn't be illegal now.
Your cigarette. We talked about marijuana earlier being legal. You said it should be legal. You think smoking, even though you are a smoker, do you know how easy it is to be addicted to it and the very little benefit you get from it? Should it be legal?
I think that if it was illegal, you'd have more of a problem with it.
How?
Because people, it's a general rule of thumb. Somebody tells you not to do something, you're going to want to do it more. It's the same concept with drinking.
I don't think you're going to have little kids smoking on the street, and it's not going to be as open.
No, exactly. You just won't see it. It'll still happen.
I don't want to see it. As long as it doesn't affect me, I don't want your cancer. Don't give your cancer to me. That's the way I look at it.
But, I mean, it's still going to happen. It's not like if you make it illegal, it's just going to go away. It's going to be cigarettes will just become another form of illegal drugs. Like marijuana, and people are still going to buy it. People are still going to do it.
So if they legalize marijuana and illegalize cigarettes, how would you feel?
How would I feel? I would just switch.
Just smoking weed all the time?
I don't know. How would I feel about that? Well, considering the fact that it would never happen, I don't think cigarettes are never going to go away. Ever. But how would I feel about that? I don't know. It's kind of a tough one to call. I mean, I would quit. I would definitely have to quit.
Mom. So we're talking about legalizing marijuana and making cigarettes illegal, hypothetically. How would you feel if that happened?
Well, I don't know if you're asking me which is worse. Is that your question?
No, the question is, looking at the government and how it's formed, if the government said, well, we're going to legalize marijuana now, and we're going to make illegal cigarettes, what would your reaction be? Because obviously cigarettes are horrible, horrible, and toxic, and poison and everything, right?
I'd say the same thing about pot.
I agree. I'm sure it's not good for you. But how would you feel if cigarettes were illegal? What would your overall reaction be? Would you say, okay, good? Mike said that everybody would still smoke. It would just be hidden more, and people would find a way about it. So I guess I just want to know, as another smoker, to get another opinion, how would you feel?
Purpose making it illegal as far as them not, you know, kids not smoking it. I think you're finding today that the younger generation is aware of it and they're not doing it. So I really think you're just going to find probably my generation that's going to go and look for it because we're addicted to the cigarettes. I mean, the nicotine's addictive. That's all there is to it. But I see a decline in smoking with the younger generation today.
So right now, today, if they were like, it's illegal, you would be like, oh, shit, I have to quit?
Well, yeah, I'm not going to go out in the streets looking for cigarettes that are illegal, so of course I would.
Then there's, I mean, are you talking about making cigarettes illegal or all tobacco? Because there's other ways to get your nicotine. You could dip. You can get the nicotine patch, the whole bit.
If it were up to me, I would say just cigarettes, because if you're doing dip, you're really not affecting anybody else.
No, but you can still get cancer from doing dip. I mean, look at Rob.
I agree. No, absolutely. But you're
what that is.
Chewing tobacco. Well, there's two different kinds. There's dip where you put it inside your cheek and you absorb the nicotine through your gums. And then there's also chewing tobacco, which you actually chew.
There's also nicotine gum that you can buy that has nicotine in it.
That's true. You get the gum that you can chew.
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of, things that try to make people quit smoking.
Right.
That's what it's used for.
Right.
I don't see, I mean, if your question is marijuana better than nicotine? I mean, I just don't see the difference. And it at all. I just, like I said, I think people today are more educated with nicotine, and they're not smoking. I think it's my generation that smoked and got addicted to the nicotine. And yeah, it's awful. It's horrible. I don't recommend cigarette smoking to anyone ever.
I agree with that.
No, I guess we got the point through of what I was trying to say, but I don't know.
Where are you going with
all this? Yeah, my point wasn't made. It's the fact that...
I mean, to make it illegal is the same thing that you're... I mean, just look at marijuana today. It's illegal. Are people smoking? Of course they are. I mean, it's not a deterrent. If anything, I think it makes them want it even more because it is an illegal thing.
That's exactly what I was saying.
And they want to go, that they want to do this thing that's illegal. Just like they are now with marijuana. They're making it legal in lots of places, medicinal marijuana.
Yeah, all you have to do is look at Prohibition in the 20s.
And, I just don't. If somebody wants to do something, they're going to do it, whether it's legal or illegal. They're just going to. I would highly recommend, though, that they should. I mean, they're doing everything they could to get rid of nicotine. To buy a pack of cigarettes today is ridiculous. The taxes on it are ridiculous. I mean, and I think that's a big deterrent why people are not smoking anymore.
Yeah, the way to get people to stop doing it is make it more expensive.
So the deterrent isn't make it illegal; it's jack up the prices.
Exactly, and if they did make it illegal. And it would go out in the black market, and you would see cigarettes go. No, it would go up.
No, I don't think so. I think it would go down.
You really think?
Yeah, I do.
Steve's mom just said she thinks that the prices would go down.
I think the prices would go down if it went off the market. Just like I think if marijuana goes on the market, it's going to be expensive.
Well, of course,
because of the regulations involved.
This is also true. But then the fact that it's illegal, wouldn't that make the people that actually sell the cigarettes, wouldn't they jack the prices up because they're selling you an illegal substance?
No, because I think you're doing just that. You're taking out the government, you're taking out the taxes, you're taking out all of that. Like I said, with marijuana, if right now people that are buying it illegally, it's going to cost them more money once it becomes legal. I don't.
So the weed smokers want to keep it illegal.
I think.
Financially speaking. Okay. With that said, though, don't.
I don't know that they would want to keep. I don't know. I mean,
everybody that you.
I'm out of my league on that one. I don't know.
Anybody that smokes weed wants to see it legalized because they don't want to get arrested. They don't want it on their record.
Plus, they don't have to deal with a dangerous drug dealer.
Exactly, that too.
Then you're not going to a drug house to get weed, And you shouldn't have... I've never done it before in my life, and you shouldn't have to deal with drug dealers.
No.
You just shouldn't. That's not something that you should have to deal with for smoking marijuana.
No, let me ask you this. I mean... People...
See, you're locking people up in jail? People are going to jail for that.
Well... Not necessarily the user is going to jail. It's the people that make it available, the people that transport it, the people that sell it.
Yeah,
If you
in California, there's a three-strike law, right? You know about that?
No.
Okay, if you get arrested in California with three felonies, you know what happens to you?
Well, obviously you'd be going to jail.
You go to jail for the rest of your life.
What?
Okay, if you have enough weed on you, let's say you go out and just make a big bulk purchase, and that's your one purchase for the year, this way you always have it. I don't know if it goes bad. I don't know.
No, usually they don't buy for the entire year.
What?
Usually you buy for like a month or two.
Okay, so you have enough that it becomes a felony, okay?
All right.
Although California is a bad example because it's legal. I get that. But now all of a sudden that's a strike on you. You know, and that, let's say you did a couple stupid things before that. Maybe you robbed a convenience, whatever. I mean, you deserve to go away.
Yeah.
But if you went to what Michael Vick did. That would have been a strike.
Right.
Okay, and he really didn't hurt any humans. I mean, he didn't really hurt anyone. Let's be honest. As much as I think Michael Vick's a scumbag, he didn't hurt anybody.
He didn't hurt any people.
Right. And obviously, I don't know. I really don't know what I was driving at, other than smokers are fucking retards.
If you just say that without explaining where you're coming from, I can see how people can be kind of put off by that. But, I mean, I understand what you're saying. You know, when I started, I completely knew the ramifications. I knew the risks involved. I knew all that stuff. I had been educated as far as tobacco is concerned. Why did I start doing it? I couldn't tell you.
You quit. You actually quit.
I did.
And you, I didn't see you smoke for a few months.
I had quit for over a year.
Okay, so you quit for over a year. You meet Jen, and next thing you know, you're smoking again.
It's poor decisions on my part. Poor decision. I mean, see now, the thing is that...
What was the line of thinking there, though? I gotta ask. I don't want you to think I'm attacking.
The line of thinking was, you know, I could have a cigarette or two while I'm drinking, and that's the way it was for a couple of months. You know, I would have.
We'd go out drinking. Yeah, I would have one.
I have one, and I'd be fine with it. That was fine until I went out and decided, I was like, all right. Going down to visit Jen. We're going to be doing a lot of drinking. We're going to be going out to the bar that she worked at, like, almost every night. Instead of me just, like, you know, mooching off everybody else, I'll just go and buy my own pack. And once I had my own pack, you know, the pack wasn't done that night, I would wake up the next morning and be like, oh, I got cigarettes. Let me have one. And it's kind of snowballed from there to the point where now I'm just smoking on a regular basis now.
How hard would it be for you to quit?
Extremely.
What did you do the first time you quit?
The first time I quit, I had quit because I was getting major shoulder surgery.
So, you think you need me to pop your shoulder out?
No. No. Now, the real reason is because they were doing a bone graft on my shoulder because I had dislocated it so many times. There's actually a dent in the ball of the humerus, the ball that actually fits into the socket. So they were going to take bone from a cadaver. And
so you're like a bi-human.
Yes, I have two titanium screws on my left shoulder. So note that for all you grave robbers out there. But no, they made this piece of bone to make the ball of my humerus the way it should be and screwed it in. And what the doctor told me is that if you smoke, it detracts from the healing process. It takes longer for it to heal.
Oh, so now you're healed, you can have a cigarette again, right?
Yeah, well, essentially, yes. But, I mean, that's the whole reason why I quit. And what made it even easier is because after the surgery, I was in so much pain and I was doped up on
Oxy?
Oxycontin, Percocets, whatever they were. I was doped up on that for like 2 weeks. The last thing I could even think about was cigarettes. I was either in pain or like semi-conscious. And once that was done. Like, I had stopped smoking for, like 3 or 4 days before my surgery, and that was tough. I'm going into surgery, I'm like, damn, all I want is a goddamn cigarette right now before I go under, you know? And I came out of surgery, and I was in pain. The last thing I was thinking about was smoking a cigarette, and then I was, you know, obviously, I was on the painkillers and all that. By the time I was done with all the painkillers and everything like that, I didn't really feel the urge to
the
smoke.
The crave was gone.
What they say about quitting smoking is that if you make it through, like, it takes about 3 days to get all the nicotine out of your system completely. If you make it past those 3 days, it only gets easier after that. You got to take it one day at a time, one craving at a time. And, you know, for
well,
a while...
What do the cravings feel like? Because I've never genuinely been addicted to anything. So what is... Explain that to me.
The best thing I can kind of equate it to, and this could be different for different people, the best thing I can equate it to is kind of like the urge to yawn. Like, you know, when you get tired and you feel kind of like kind of short of breath. Like, not that I'm getting short of breath because I want a cigarette, but it's just like there's just like I feel like in my chest like I have this craving. Now I'm making you yawn.
How funny is that? The mere mention of the word yawn, I yawned.
But I mean, that's like the only thing I can really equate it to.
So then it doesn't sound like you. It sounds like you could survive that though.
Survive what?
The urge to yawn. If that's the best equivalent, I don't know if it is. Maybe there's something better, and you're just not thinking of it. But if that's the best equivalent, then. You have to. I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's. I'm not equating it to it. I'm just relate. I'm relating it to that urge. I mean, obviously, if you have to yawn, you're gonna yawn. It's gonna happen. There's no way for you to stop it. With this, it's more of a willpower thing. You can't just will yourself to not yawn.
Does it hurt?
No, it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt. It's just like.
So stop being such a cunt and quit.
I will eventually, Steve. I will, and I'm going to keep saying that for a long time. No, but let me ask you this. Say tomorrow we get a blizzard, all right? And they call a state of emergency, and you can't drive anywhere. You can't go anywhere, right? And state of emergency for like a week. And you haven't played ball in a week and a half.
I actually haven't played ball in about a week.
Yeah.
That's good.
So, Now let me just tell you. And
that's
so,
healthy for you. That's good for you.
That's besides the point. All right, that's besides because people are addicted to working out. So say tomorrow it's 70 and sunny. You're gonna have the incredible urge to go out and play ball, aren't you?
Yes.
I mean, I can kind of equate it in that sense too. Just because it's something that's good for you and it's exercise doesn't mean that the relationship isn't there between those two things, between the urge to have a cigarette and the urge to do something like play basketball, or for Tiger Woods to have sex, or whatever. Somebody can be addicted. You can be addicted to a lot of things.
Are those addictions, though? Or is it, like, to me, it's not like an addiction with basketball. Like, I just went 10 days, actually, right now, without playing, because Stockton's got intramurals going on, so it's kind of tough to go over there and play. The weather's been shitty, so I haven't been able to play ball.
What about coffee?
Coffee is probably the closest addiction I have. And
do you ever get an urge to drink a cup of coffee?
I haven't. I went off coffee for about 3 or 4 days. I didn't have any headaches. I could do it. I just enjoy it.
See, now, like, with the cigarettes, I mean, there isn't any kind of painful withdrawal symptoms.
I think I'm lucky in the fact that I don't really feel like I have an addictive personality. Like, there will be things that I get into and I really love, but it never becomes like an addiction, like, oh, I gotta fucking do this, like, where I can't breathe or I can't function, you know what I mean? And that's what it seems like to me when I see someone trying to quit. It's like, when I watch that, it's like they can't fucking function. Without it, it's like, oh, I need a cigarette now. It's like, oh, I just finished eating. Now I have to have a cigarette. And it seems like a, what's the word I'm looking for?
Routine.
A routine, exactly.
And that's one of the things that's That's one of the things that makes it so hard to quit, is because you're used to that routine.
It's like my dad wakes up, he has a cup of coffee, and he has a cigarette.
And you have a cigarette. And
it's disgusting.
I could go through my routine. When I wake up, I smoke a cigarette. I, you know, download the stuff for, you know, for my job. You know, I prep.
Okay.
I prep to go out. I go out to the car, light up a cigarette, drive to wherever I go. Depending on how far I'm driving, I might have another cigarette.
So
on
what if you cut the middle one off?
Cut what?
When you walk into your car.
Oh, you mean cut down?
Yeah. Wouldn't that be the best way to do it? To quit?
Start cutting parts of your routine out. But let me get through it.
Okay.
I'll get to my next deal. I'll do what I got to do at my first site. And then I get back into the car to process it all, light up a cigarette. And then I'll go out and I have to do a few more things before I can leave. And then when I leave the dealership, I light up another cigarette. And it's the same thing for every dealership. And also with eating, I finish eating, I have a cigarette. The rest of the night, I just kind of like light up a cigarette whenever I feel like it.
Have you ever been really scared where you had to run away from something?
No. Are you trying to?
No. Yeah. I mean, what if someone's chasing you? Next thing you know, you got your hands on your knees and you can't run. Someone's coming to kill you, Mike.
I've never been in that situation before.
Good.
But I would think. I would like to think that adrenaline would kind of take over in that situation.
You would hope. I don't know. Whenever I always see someone who smokes, I go, okay, I know how to beat them up in a fight. Right away, punch them in the chest, and you know they're fucked. If they're a smoker, they're big smokers, punch them in the chest.
The longer you smoke, the harder it's going to be.
I know. And it's just, Steve's mom just said, the longer you smoke, the harder it's going to be, and that's 100% true.
But, all right, I think we're done yelling at Mike. You got anything else for us?
No, not really. I mean, I didn't even think we were going to wind up talking about this.
Well, that's a great thing about the podcast, is it's just brief flowing.
Oh, of course. Absolutely. Speaking of podcasts, man, I'm almost finished with that Joe Rogan podcast. I got like 10 minutes left.
Now you
got
to download another one.
I do. I want to download another one.
I'll recommend a bunch to you. We're promoting another podcast. I have no idea we're even promoting it. But if you like our podcast, go listen to Rogan's podcast.
It'll make ours sound like shit, so don't do it.
Yeah, really. Usually a bunch of comedians talking and bullshitting, and they're actually funny, and we just try. But not too much sports talk.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of like, aside from like mid-July, this is kind of like a downtime in sports. I mean, you do have two sports going on, but it's the NBA and they're in the regular season. It's not playoffs.
Kobe, game winner today.
Yeah,
Toronto.
It's all that.
Kobe.
Did see that, the grainy internet footage?
We were watching Rubio. I go. You know what? Here's a fun way to end it. All right. What are your favorite inspirations as far as getting into this?
Getting into radio?
Yeah. We're radio podcasting. I guarantee you ours are pretty similar. Give me five names.
Colin.
Agreed.
Colin. Definitely Colin. I would probably have to say...
What is it about Colin that you like so much? Colin Cowherd, guys. He's on ESPN Radio. He does a lot of sports coverage for that. He's fucking brilliant.
There's one. He's a brilliant dude. Knows his stuff. He's entertaining. He's always talking about something different. He'll leapfrog from topic to topic to topic.
What I love most about Colin is the fact that he'll turn an awesome sports issue into like almost a social issue. And he'll get you looking at it from different perspectives and different ways. And that's really, I don't know if I'm doing it, but that's really what I'm aiming to do with this. I'm trying to get us to look at everything in different ways and different angles.
Yeah.
And that, I don't know if I'm doing it, but that's what I'm attempting to do.
And I also like his Two for the Road.
Two for the Road's fantastic.
Sometimes. Most of the time. There's sometimes it's kind of like, did I really just run back to my car so I can listen to this? I mean, every once in a while there's a dud. I mean, you can't always ask for funny news all the time.
That's the truth. Who else?
You know, I mean, I know you don't like him, but I listen to Mike Gill a lot. And I was like, if this dopey bastard can do it, so can I.
So he was more of a, if this bum could do it, I definitely could do it, because this guy's a fucking bum.
Remember the Jabo guys, the Just a Bit Outside guys? If those two idiots can do it.
Yeah, okay, so you like to see shitty people attempt doing what we're doing now. And then
The reason why I'm bringing those two up is because there aren't really too many people in the national spotlight that I really listen to on a regular basis. I mean, the only other ones would be like Mike and Mike in the Morning.
The person who really got me into sports radio wasn't even Colin. He I don't know if he's still with ESPN. I don't know where he's at right now. He was with them for a long time. It was Eric Casilius.
I remember the name. I hear his name brought up every once in a while.
He did a lot of his show. It was when I had classes down in Cape May, so I would always, and he was on during Mike Gill's spot, like mid-2000s, like 2005, 2006, 2007. I must have been on his show like 10 or 11 times, and he was Colin before I knew Colin.
Right.
You know what I mean? And he was awesome. The other guy, I love Joe Rogan. I think his podcast is awesome. He's funny, thought provoking. He gets you to think about things I would never think about.
Hear stories that you would never hear about.
Exactly. Bill Simmons is another one. He was really the first podcast I ever listened to. I said, if this guy's got a podcast, I guarantee you everybody else does. And then I googled a couple of my favorite comedians, and was like, oh shit, Joe Rogan's got a podcast, and so does Duncan Trussell. And, you know, and it just went off from there. So, yeah, I think they're my bigger influences for getting into talking to the air. Or you?
I didn't really have too much of an influence. It was more like along the lines of I went to college for this and.
But what made you go to college? It was guys like Colin.
No,
you were always into
college because it's what you did after high school.
Oh no, I thought you meant your radio school.
Oh yeah, I went.
That's
to,
what I meant.
I went. All right, so I went to college. I majored in communications, but I had no clue what I wanted to do with it. No idea. I don't even know why I picked it. To be honest with you. I graduated with a degree in communications and figured I would do something like in TV or film or something like that, and kind of never really did anything with it because I got myself a job, I finished school while working, and I'm still working in the same job that I had when I was still in college. I haven't really done anything with my degree, and just like sitting there contemplating, what do I want to do with my life? What am I really interested in? What is it that I, what kind of contributions do I want to make to society? And something that I really have a lot of interest in is working in TV and radio. And really the only thing that really kind of held me back from doing it was not knowing how to get started, how to get my foot in the
door.
Getting involved in it. And then, you know, a couple of years ago, my dad heard the commercials on the radio, WIP, for Connecticut School Broadcasting.
ESPN's always got them on now.
Yeah. So, you know, he told me about it. I looked into it and was like, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. You know, you go there, they train you in television and radio. And basically, there's two mediums. It's kind of like a crash course. Doesn't really get too like heavily detailed. It's kind of like a broad spectrum of training.
It's to get you ready.
It's to get you ready, and they you know, after you go through the program, you successfully complete it. Their studios are open to you to use. Like I can go back to the school tomorrow and use their television studio to record a mock weather report or a mock newscast. I could go back. I can go into their sound studios, and we could go there and record a podcast on professional equipment. And we're using the stuff that I bought at Radio Shack, but we could go there and we can do that. They have a talk show studio there, set up with like six mics on a round table. that we could go and use and have six of us sitting there having a discussion, just like you and I are sitting here. I can do that, and I can bring you in, even though you haven't gone through the program. But I went through there, and then they also do job placement for life. So, you know, I'm working on getting my demo together. I'm obviously going to be pulling stuff from here, from this podcast. I also do a radio show on the internet, FuriousRadio.com. I'm on Mondays and Wednesdays, 8 to 10. Yeah, I got to plug myself a little bit. But I do that. This is all experience. This is all stuff that I can...
promote us when you're on there?
Absolutely.
Oh, you have?
Ever since we recorded the first one, I've been promoting the podcast on.
I said that bad now, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I do cross promotions, man.
All right, there it is.
So...
Really, I think I got a couple people who want to write blogs, and mostly social issues, but we're going to find a way to get that up on our website going, and yeah. I hope you guys enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely. Wait, who's writing blogs?
I'll tell you off the air.
All right. So we're gonna have to incorporate that into the podcast a little bit.
He's in Israel, so it's gonna be kind of difficult.
No, I mean like our.
What they're talking about?
Yeah.
What's he talking about? Yeah. But
yeah, like, you know, post a blog on our site on like say Thursday or Friday or whatever.
I got two people who we're gonna do some cross advertising with. I've actually, contrary to belief, been trying to get us out there. So
nice.
I got two people who have the one kid's got like 2,000 readers a day.
Shit.
So if we could get to that, and then the other kid's got close to 3,500 a day.
Let me ask you this. What's the story with those press passes?
Do you want to talk on the air? I mean, it sounds pretty promising. I filled out the application already. I put my boy's name down for it, so it sounds like we're going
to
get it.
Let me ask you this. We got to get some recording. If we're going to be going to the weigh-ins, the press conferences, I want to bring a voice recorder. Not necessarily all this equipment.
Yeah, we'll record.
Get a voice record these guys, you know, ask them questions. We can bring you
the
interview.
Get time with whoever's at the booth.
Right.
Everybody in the media gets at least 5 minutes with everyone who's at the press conference.
We're going to have a little mini interview. We'll bring it to you on the podcast.
So, well, at the very least, I definitely want to sit down with Dana White.
There you go.
That's a must for me. I happen to find the guy incredibly entertaining, and so who knows, you know. But yeah, that's what it looks like.
I really hope that all our listeners out there didn't hear Erica just come in the door and say that. I doubt that they did, though. Now I got to tell you what it is, because I've been talking. She walks in the door and says, "Hi, Stinky Brain," referring to the dog.
And with that, we're out.